and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 169, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. Joining me this week, the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Everyone's favourite custard cream, Mr. Tony Esmond.
Dan sent me pornography on the WhatsApp group.
Let's just skip that. And this week's guest is the creator of such fine, strange, and hilarious tales as Nightwatch, Bold, The Taxi, Gang Culture in 1950s Swansea, and his latest gravity-defying book, Adrift. It's our pleasure to welcome John Tucker to the show. Hello, sir.
Hello, how are we doing?
Good, right, man. Yeah, good to have you on.
We're doing well.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah. I wanted to introduce you straight away, because otherwise, God knows where we were going to go with what Tony just said. But yes, this is actually, we're back to the normal schedule of recording. This is properly post Thought Bubble. Thank you to everyone that listened to the last show. No doubt, whether you're in Thought Bubble, MCM Scotland, there was lots of comic book shows happening last week. Last weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Last weekend. Yeah.
And we hope that you all had a fantastic, successful time there. You know, unfortunately, some of us couldn't make it to shows. Could be Dan.
No, sadly not.
I mean, Dan couldn't
make it. Make it on this show.
Yeah, he couldn't even make it on this show. And I hope you were okay with what I did.
Oh, that's totally fine. Okay. Gets a few laughs.
Yeah. Oh, actually, no, that's spoiling the illusion, isn't it? Of course, you only popped in for a little bit last week, didn't you, Dan?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. and thank you for all the kind words on last week's show as well. And we hope you enjoyed it. We haven't done a full-on sort of review show for a little while. That was fun. And we're going to do
another
one before the end of the year, which is fast approaching. I can't believe, I don't know where this year's going. It's insane.
I know.
Front notes.
Yeah. But
you know what else is fast approaching?
The Comic House segment.
Yep.
You're absolutely right, Dan. Yes, Comic House are our lovely sponsor. Regular listeners will know this, but if this is your first show, welcome. And my segues are terrible.
Oh, I finally met Pete as well.
Yes. Did you? Oh, yes. Of course you did. Yeah.
Yeah, I met with Thought Bubble. Yeah, it's good to meet him finally. We were busy as fuck, but we stopped for a chat. It was good. Yeah.
He's a good man, Pete. And the Comic House crew do fine work in the name of indie comics. And
it was one of my many occasions of just apologising straight away when I meet someone.
that's your hello, isn't it?
It is almost. I said, look, I'm really, really sorry about the adverts. And he went, no, they're kind of like a cult thing, aren't they? That's
nice. Well, like the Wicker Man.
They're like a cult if you exchange the L for an N. Do you know what I mean? They're kind of like that, aren't they?
Oh, Tony, I do appreciate you getting around extra editing for me. Sure. Yes, but Pete and Comic House do great work. They're the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and they've got a huge selection of titles. More and more people are joining up all the time to sell their books through Comic House. If you self-publish and print your own books, you can list your work on there for free, and when you sell a copy, they only take 1p commission, which is brilliant. And with so much small press stuff coming out all the time, with every convention, there's always a launch, isn't there? And so Comic House is always being added to, as is the digital versions, because Comic House has its own app. It's like Netflix for comics, and I sound like a whore every time I say it.
It's going so well.
I know, and you wouldn't believe it, but some of this nonsense that I'm talking isn't on the script.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
Imagine scripting this, though.
I know. Like Mad Libs. I don't even know what that is.
I feel like I've fallen into a sort of corporate hole, and I'm surrounded by corporate people.
You are a corporate hole. Yay! High five, anyone? Anyone?
No. He's gone full Partridge again. Just me. Hang on, Dan.
Once a week, I'll go full Partridge. It's normally at the end, but I've started early. It's the caffeine. It's kicked in. Anyway, the app has loads of digital stuff that they're adding to all the time. We've spoken about it many times. A lot of the books and the recommendations are because we've checked out on the app. But what have they got on there at the moment?
There's a load of new titles. We've got Guillotine by Dave Charlton, Gallant and Amos, Chip McFitt's Wanted Dead or Alive by Matt Greaves, Sick in the Head, Milford Green by Samuel George London, which is a great book, that. Joanna Fisher and the Golden Idol, Monster Kids, Show and Yell, The Great Penguins to Coldly Go by Alan Henderson, and also Mike Garley and Ed Clifton have uploaded 32 Kills.
Oh, I started reading that today.
And we've got the whole selection of Mike Garley stuff, including all three parts of the Samurai Slasher, just in time for Halloween, which is around the corner.
Yes. Yeah, because he's got an upcoming Kickstarter, hasn't he? He does a Kickstarter every Halloween. Brilliant.
Because technically it's October starts tomorrow, isn't it? And that's when everyone changes their stupid Twitter name.
You mean he starts today?
Oh, yeah. But today's when they all start changing their Twitter name, so I don't ever fucking recognise who I'm talking to, because it's all...
Well, I'm the Vince of Darkness, if you ever
wondered. Oh, that's it. Yeah.
I'll probably have to change my symbol to be like Christopher Lee or something.
You know, I might change mine to Vince Hunt.
Don't do that. No one will ever believe that.
I've got to stay on brand. Not going to change it.
What do you mean you stay on brand?
I don't want a brand butcher. I don't want to corrupt that.
Yeah, that's true. Good idea.
You don't want to corrupt your brand.
Don't corrupt.
Sorry, Tony.
My toxic brand.
Sorry, Tony. That's the most corporate thing that's ever been said on this show.
It is a little bit. And it's from Dan, the least corporate person I know.
Yeah. What were you doing on your week off, Dan? Were you organising your portfolio and doing a spreadsheet?
He was making a mind map.
Yeah, working, sadly. Nothing exciting, working.
Oh, he doesn't even go along with the stories now, Tony.
No. Oh, remember when he was better than that? Do you remember when he was more punk?
I remember when he was punk.
Punk rock gang.
Yeah.
I did stay up till 10:30 last night. Does that count?
That's too much for me.
Yeah.
Jesus. we're talking punk, not complete fucking anarchy.
Had a coffee after 8. It's fucking up the rails.
Jesus Christ. I bet you put sugar on your Weetabix as well, don't you?
No, I can't stand Weetabix. It's like fucking slop. But anyway, fuck.
I am in the upside down. I don't know where I am. But wherever I am, you can get great comics on Comic House.
And porridge.
And porridge.
Yeah. I've got a porridge gun.
Single barreled.
Pump action. Go to comichouse.com. No. Yes, you can find out more. You can sign up. You can get a 14-day free trial. For only £3 a month, you get access to all those brilliant digital titles. Most of the time, we recommend books on this show because of them. Not because they pay us to, but because they're kind of great books. So, so it's amazing. So
you're
check
still
out
there, John.
What was that? Sorry?
Still there.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I got to say, the workplace bullying that occurs with Dan Butcher is a lot harder to listen to when you're actually in on the call. Dan, I've got some phone numbers if you need them, mate.
Look, don't you start this, John, because he's always picking on me every week.
I've seen no evidence of that.
No. Oh, no. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Esther Ranson needs to hear about this, I think.
Yeah.
She won't talk to Dan after she finds out he has a coffee at 8 o'clock.
Maybe not.
She's a bit of a goer. I can tell you that now.
Esther Ranson?
Yeah.
That's a hell.
Arse of gold. Is she hearts of gold? Is that
something like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, she didn't do that, did she?
I don't know.
It worked for the purposes of the joke. Let's just
move on. Yeah. Okay. Let's just move on. I think it's for the best. You're absolutely right, Dan. So, obviously, we are back to a kind of normal. We're picking on each other. The guest is joining in. But last week there was, of course, the epic yearly show that was Thought Bubble. If you knew the indie comic marketplace, you probably heard. If it wasn't MCM Scotland, then it was definitely Thought Bubble that was all over social media. Myself and Daniel couldn't be there, but Tony Esmond was there, as was John. And you want to talk about it, don't you, boys?
Yeah, I had a really good time. I have to say, it's probably my best Thought Bubble.
Brilliant!
Yeah, I really like that new event. Have you ever been to the old layout before, John?
No. I've been sort of like aware of Thought Bubble for a very long time. Because I started doing comics in like 2010, I think I started doing them.
Okay.
And back then it was like, and I was living in Manchester at the time, so it was kind of like a big regional thing back then. But it was like on the up and up every year. And I think it was in the Armory until
it was, yeah,
2014, wasn't it? No, I've not been before, but it was unbelievable. Absolutely.
How did you find it? Which tent were you in, dude?
I was in the Comixology Marquee. Because they send you all the email, but because you know Thought Bubble's going to be like the biggest convention in the country, right? And they send you all the paperwork and what have you. And so you're going to be in the Comixology marquee. Now, marquee makes it sound like you're going to be in some fucking gazebo around the back. And then you get in there, and like just that marquee alone would have been the biggest convention that we've ever done. Like it was big enough to handle like the overspill from a royal wedding. There was like 200 tables in there or something like that. It was fucking ridiculous. But you know, and then there was two other marquees, and there was the Vic. There was, you know, the Victoria Hall. I've never seen anything like it. It was like everything that I thought it would be, like times two. You know what I mean? Like it was huge. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it.
It's good to see that it's still the one. It's still the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And footfall was. I was in the Victoria Hall. And football was really good there. I worked it out. We're talking about this on the Facebook page early in the week, but I worked out sort of around about 7 out of 10 people who picked a book up bought one.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Better than I got. Fuck me. Not a chance, boys.
I mean, part of that's going to be the Hilda effect, because we were selling the Hilda books and stuff like that. So, you know, we sort of sold out then. But you didn't find that the case then. What happened with your table then, John?
Well, here's the thing, right? You've got to remember, right? We are, you know, not to disparage the standard of guests on the show, but we are no names, right? No one knows who the fuck we are. Right?
Not now. We're going to strap a rocket to your back. Woo!
Well, hopefully, yeah. but like, you know, we're not fucking, you know, we're not megastars. We're just these yokels who've driven up from Swansea, like, with a half table, just to sort of scope it out. And, you know, plus, you know, you've got to figure in, you know, and I know it's like the big one, but, you know, the price of a table is X, and then there's the drive from Swansea, two nights in a hotel, all the rest of it. So, like, I don't think we expected to break even, but we came very, very close, which was...
That's not bad, man.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, not bad at all. Yeah. Like, we were really pleasantly surprised. But the thing, like, I did write a big blog about this on my own website, but, like, the thing that got me about Thought Bubble is that... Like, because like this is our first year. On, I say our, like me and my wife is like my salesperson and spokesperson, because I can't talk to the public about my own books, and I just sit there drawing gruesome murders all night long. you know, we did True Believers in Cheltenham. That was the first convention I'd ever been to, like either as a punter or an exhibitor. And then we did Cardiff, where we met yourselves, and then we did a small press day in Swindon for Sarah Harris, and then we did Thought Bubble. So by Thought Bubble, we thought, oh, you know what? We're old hands at this now. You know, we've pretty much got this figured out.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the punters at Thought Bubble, they look like the punters at all the other events, but they are not the punters from Cardiff. They're not the punters from Cheltenham, because, you know, it's because of the scale of the thing. People can't be spending £10-15 at any one. You know, we found a lot of people buying individual issues, which we weren't finding before, because we were doing like the bumper pack of all my back catalogue.
Yeah,
we were finding at Cardiff and Swindon, a lot of people were going for that, because we think it's priced competitively, and we think it's a good deal.
Yeah.
So we assumed that that would translate to Thought Bubble, but it isn't like that there, because people are looking to get a little bit of everybody.
Yeah.
So we sold a lot of individual issues and a lot of individual sketches, which is great, because that's the highest margin item on the table, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was an eye opener. So I think next time, and we'd love to go back, because we had a great time, and you know, we had a great time speaking to everybody, because, you know, with comics being such like an isolationist pursuit, and it's something you just do alone, in, you know, you don't really get to speak to anybody. So even if you're tabling next to good people, you don't really get to talk. So it was good at Thought Bubble to actually meet some people, especially at the mid-con party and what have you, to actually sit down with people and have a proper talk to them. So yeah, we'd love to go back, and we had a really great weekend.
I mean, the Thought Bubble experience, the first Thought Bubble, is always a massive eye-opener, and certainly gets you thinking. So next time, like, you go, you're definitely gonna. Would you say you change your tabling sort of layout, or sort of like the way you're gonna work it, compared to every other con in that you go to in the year? You know, Thought Bubble is the one-off exception to how you're gonna sell things.
Yeah, you almost need to have two layouts. You need your convention layout, and you need your Thought Bubble layout, because the customers. And another thing I noticed is the customers at, like, it was little things that we thought, oh, we should have thought of that, but you don't really, you can't until you see it. You know, it was little things like we had our comics like stacked on like a set of steps, and we noticed that whereas at other conventions people would look up and down and up and down and then like grab the one that really like appealed to them, because yeah. people were like walking down, head down, got to get moving, people were just grabbing the one nearest to them.
Okay.
It's a little, it, you know, it's a little thing, but it's something you don't think of until you see it over and over again, is that people just come over, they raise their head like 3 degrees to the right, and they just see a comic in their eye line, and they grab it and read it, and they judge your entire back catalogue based on that one comic yeah. That is there, you know. So
that's really interesting, man. I had a similar sort of experience where I'm not sort of bigging the company up, but I think that the no-brow books look more expensive than they actually are.
I think so too.
And because you have a sort of a cruise by mentality, because a lot of people, there's a lot of fucking walking at Thought Bubble, isn't there? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's sort of four or five different venues, is you've got to walk around. So we had only small sort of price tags. So I doubled the size of them and got more sales because of it, because people went, oh, it's only £7.
Yeah, that's yeah. it.
And then they go back. And also the other thing I think is worth considering for a 2-day convention is changing the entire layout for the second day. Because you get people who are there yes. for both days, and they come around and say, oh, I walked past you yesterday, but I didn't see you had this. So I actually kept a few back, because we sold out of Hilda and a couple of other things. So I kept a few things back that then got put on the table, and I put the cheaper deal comics, so the sort of 4 for £20 type comics, I put them on the table on the Sunday afternoon, and we sold a few of them as well right. because of it. I think there's a real technique to Thought Bubble because of that.
Yeah.
You know, people do look to buy the... I know I didn't get, even get to Avery Hills, but I think they were putting books out for £1 a time in the last hour or something like that, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, we were going to do that. We were going to change the layout between days one and two, but not to refresh the table, which is, you know, obviously that's good logic. But we were going to do it just to do a bit of, like, A-B testing to see, like, will this work better here? Will this work better there? We didn't in the end because we couldn't be bothered and we forgot. But, you know, maybe next time. But, no, it was... Yeah, Thought Bubble is a beast unto itself, but we had a great time, and we would love to go back if they'd have us. Yeah,
I think with the new venue as well. With the old venue, there weren't that many sort of bars and restaurants locally, so for the sort of party or the bar where everyone went to drink, you had to walk back into town. With the main convention bar is adjacent to one of the tents. You literally walk out the front door, one of the tents, and into the hotel bar, and everyone was there.
That must be heaving.
Yeah, mate, fucking it, yeah. I went to a couple of parties. I went to the Colours May Vary no-brow opening on the Friday, and then I went to the Avery Hill party and met Sidesy and Lady and all that firm. And that was absolutely heaving. You couldn't get in there because it was a release of Follow Me In and Thingy Orbit. Retrograde Orbit.
Yeah.
And that, did you get to that, John, did you?
No, I didn't. The only one I got to was the MidCon party, which was in the Trinity Kitchen.
Yeah.
That was really good because I got speaking to John Lake there, so he gets around.
Yeah.
I got speaking to and also had a good conversation with Todd Oliver and Andy Barron from Om.
Oh, I love Andy. Yeah, they're both good guys. Yeah, Todd and Andy both cracking. They're both like tiny bit simpatico with their sort of out there comics as well, which I kind of like. Oh yeah, I spoke to both of them actually. Andy came over the table for a chat, which. Made a welcome. I saw that
Todd completely did you over with your death roulette. He did a
He tucked me up. Yeah. no, I mean, yeah. I mean, it was a real honor to see that come through the post. But even that, do you know what I mean? Like, I should have bought those comics from Todd when I was at Thought Bubble, but there wasn't fucking time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, just, I know. I felt the same way.
Like, the only people I saw who I meant to see at their tables were Tony and. No, that was it. You were the only one. The other people I meant to see were Todd Oliver, but I saw him at the MidCon party, and Sarah Millman, but I bumped into her just in the street. Like, I didn't even see her at a table. It's just the way it is, you know. It's just this massive, like, Leviathan convention that you just can't... You can either be at it or you can be in it. You can't be both, you know?
Yeah,
you
I think you're right, man, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got away from the table for 5 minutes to do this interview that we'll hear in a minute, but that's it.
Yeah,
that's all I got. Yeah, yeah. I was only fortunate that because I did the table on my own for most of the weekend, but I was fortunate that Iz McAuliffe was the helper in our hall.
Yeah.
So she was sort of brought me a bottle of water and all that sort of thing over. But it was so busy, I didn't get a chance to do any shopping at all.
It closed
at 5, and literally the hall was empty at 5:45. Everything was moved and gone.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, it was the same with us. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Sarah Harris and John Otway for helping me pack the car up. You know that bit in Ghostbusters where they run down the steps of the university they're at? You know, that's the steps up and down to the fucking car for loading the car up and down. It was like gruesome. That's pretty good. Yeah, I've got a couple of other people just to give a little shout out to. Thanks to Zoe from No Brow. She helped me on Saturday morning and good company. Sean Phillips came round and had a good chat. And David Roach, who's the 2000 AD artist, came around as well. They were a really good company, actually. Thanks to Ian Ashcroft's reader, listener art. He did some for us, which I sent to you boys, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's lovely. And also thanks to Philip McFarlane, who did me a sort of sarcastic Mrs. Brown's Boys picture, which is nice. It's cool. Yeah, so well, anything else you had to say about it, John? Anything else, your thoughts on it for people who might do it next year? What would you say?
I'd say if you're in my position of like, let's say you're starting comics now in the run up to Thought Bubble 2019. I would make sure that, especially if it's your first time at the gate, make sure you've got plenty of stuff that is priced below £3.
Okay, interesting.
Because that's one advantage we have, because we do, you know, I don't think there's anything on our table. No, Death Roulette Survivor, but none of the books on our table cost more than £3.
Right.
So that does help, I think. That's like general advice I would say about like pricing, but like it's especially true at Thought Bubble where, you know, I mean, and that's not to say that anyone who added something for £4 is like a, you know, a fucking miser, but, you know, it's... When you're dealing with that volume of artists under one roof,
you've got to
meet them in the middle. And yeah, I would just say like make sure there's things like, because we had badges as well this year, and they moved in quite good numbers. So like just little things that are obvious pickups. I would say that's probably like lesson number one. Like it's all well and good to bring you a £30 graphic novel, but good luck.
You know? I think some of those higher price sort of ticket things get overlooked, because I think a lot of people, when they go to Thought Bubble, they make their shopping list before they go, because the crowd that go to Thought Bubble, they know what they're going for, don't they? They want to see comics, and so they'll pick up, you know, that's where you see a lot of articles about launches, you know, books that are launching at Thought Bubble. So you know, Avery Hill probably absolutely smashed it with the amount I've heard about like their books and stuff like that. So there was people already going,
brilliant, they're so well organized for that as well.
But you had the people going, right, I want that book and that book, and you know, these graphic novels, £10-15, do you know what I mean? So they're the bigger price ones. So I think when it comes to the bigger price comics, people already have almost pre-bought it before they get there.
Something I took advantage of is pre-sales. So we've got a limited number of these sort of Hilda dolls, and I put them out for pre-sales, and we had one left which sold in 5 minutes after we opened, because everyone had reserved one, along with a load of our books. And I think you've got to do that. I think you've got to say it's coming out, and if you want one, let me know. It also gives you a little heads up as how much money you're going to make in the morning and stuff like that, you know.
It's a
really good idea for that.
And people will go around and spend, you know, if they've got these shopping lists. I mean, certainly I've thought the same when I go to conventions. I've got like a list of like, all right, I want to pick up that book, and I'll try and get the bigger price book straight away, just so you've almost ticked it off your list, you know, so you know how much money you've got then to do the browse, to do that, you know, those buy those cheaper comics. I think that's quite that's good advice, John. I think a big
point as well is beyond the price, beyond the money that you sort of, you know, people budget, don't they? They budget £100 or what they're going to spend at a convention. I think also you have to be aware of how much people can carry. Because a lot of conventions like Thought Bubble, people have got a rucksack, and they, you know, I mean, Follow Me In, which fortunately, because I've my car and I bought it on the Friday night, ain't a light book. You know, I mean, it's quite a heavy book. You know, if you're going to be lugging a rucksack full of stuff around for, you know, a day or two, or if you're there for both days and you're going home on the train, you're thinking, how much space have I got? So the smaller weight items, smaller sort of volume items are sometimes better as well, because they'll get picked up on the Sunday afternoon.
I mean, when I was making Adrift, like, Adrift is A6, and it was like specifically designed to be able to stick it in your pocket. With Thought Bubble in mind, you know, because like the script for Adrift has been written for ages and ages, but I thought it'd be nice to have something new for Thought Bubble, and I thought I can condense this down into like a small book that's an easy carry, you know.
Definitely.
So and it, as spread I on Sorry, Tony.
Sorry, go, mate. You go.
I was saying a good spread on prices, like something for a couple of quid, as well as kind of a high end thing. That's a definite must for, yeah, for Thought Bubble.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, because, I mean, like, my graphic novel's in the works at the minute and it's not quite finished. So, like, we haven't figured out where that fits into, like, the bumper pack we offer. Mm. But, you know, we've got, like, a selection of books, the price, like, you know, £1, £2, a couple of £3 ones, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if anyone shows any interest, that's when we tell them you can get them all for a tenner or get them all plus a death roulette for 12. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's at that point that you can try and, like, work a deal in. Because we used to have it printed on the table, like, you know, we've got a bumper pack deal on. But we found a lot of people really weren't, like, you know, because if you got too much written down on your table, there's only so much people can take in.
Yeah.
You know, so we find it's best to wait until someone shows a bit of interest and then, you know, tell them in person, like, oh, you know, by the way, we've got a deal on and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I think, yeah, price, like, just pricing reasonably, I would say, is a good sales tactic.
Yeah, yeah, competitively, you go, mate. Yeah, you've got to be competitive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What else is going on? Definitely.
Imagine it's absolutely sensory overload at Thought Bubble.
It is, mate. Oh, it's almost too much, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how many different we take contactless signs I saw. But you know what I mean, like, it, you know, it is a joke, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, the real estate on those tables is so, like, precious when you're competing for people's attention that you've, yeah, really, you can't have, like, superfluous signage. You just can't,
yeah,
have it.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like telling people about deals, you know, it's a good opportunity to actually speak to people and, like, having, you know, a bit of rapport with them, what have you, you know. So, yeah, I'd say that's probably another good Thought Bubble tip is don't have too many cardboard signs on your table.
Yeah.
It's not the most entertaining tip. Nah. Good...
Yeah.
I do like tables that are quite kind of relatively sparse and clear. When there's, yeah, like stuff all over the shop and they've got the side bits coming up, and not a massive fan of that.
Yeah, and especially if you're a table next to a table, don't have that fucking side bit up.
Yeah, it's really
blocking. Oh, it is
really wire racks.
Yeah.
So I don't,
as someone's walking down the aisle, they can't see your table. It's like, all right, we know you got you know, there's other places you can put it that stop, you know. There's that I find that quite annoying these days.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Should we crack on for the next bit?
Yeah.
So as everyone knows, we're big fans of Europe Comics, and Arena Polyanina, who is our, I think I describe her in this interview as our crack dealer. she sort of laughs off politely. Was there, and to be fair, she spent a couple of hours at the table just chatting. She is great company. And then I talked her into doing an interview, which she was a bit worried about doing. But I have to say, she comes off magnificently. And I surprised her with her, what are your three favourite books? And she throws herself into it. And it's quite, as the whole, I don't know about you, John, but I found the whole weekend, like, really inspiring, you know, really sort of off your arse and sort of create type thing. And this is definitely part of that. So here is Arena from Europe Comics talking about their sort of project and what they've got coming up. So, here with me is Irina. Say your last name, Irina.
It's Irina Polyanina.
Ah, yeah, I knew that was right. Yeah, good. Now, you are essentially sort of a crack dealer for the Awesome Comics podcast at the moment, is that right?
Thank you for this nickname. I'll accept it.
So, we're just going to have a quick chat about how Europe Comics is quite a newish project, would you say?
Well, the project has been around for 3 years now. We launched in November 2015, and basically it's 10 various European publishers from countries like Spain, Italy, France, Belgium, Serbia, Poland, and from UK we have Cinebook, who you've just seen. There's also two rights agents, Mediatoon from France and Belgium, and Akan Ajans from Turkey, as well as an audiovisual company called Elipsanim. So they all formed into a project to promote European comics and European artists around the world, mainly amongst English-speaking readers. So the project got co-funded by the European Commission.
Okay.
So this is our main financial source.
Yeah.
And yeah, and as I mentioned, in order to promote European comics and European talent amongst English-speaking readers, so what we do is we select comics from these various catalogs from Spain, Italy, France, and Belgium, and so on, so on. We translate it into English, and we distribute them digitally. Yeah. So you can buy our comics through Comixology, Apple, there is the French...
Isneo.
Yeah. I was just going to say there's
Isneo.
The first...
Yeah, yeah. I started using it when I was on a holiday once, and I really like it.
They have a great variety of comics.
It's an in-app buy one as well, unlike Comixology. I just on the iPad, so slightly different, but yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we work with them. They are our distributor, essentially. Yeah.
So how do you go around finding... Because I know we've chatted quite a lot online and stuff mm-hmm. about our love for certain artists and stuff yes. like that. So you do have a passion for comics. Does that result in you saying we should choose this thing by Enrico Marino? Or, you know, Marini or something like that? Or?
No. So the editorial decisions are not made by me. But what we do try to do is include the most various comics we can get into the catalogue. Sort of, we have comics for children, we have sci-fi, we have fantasy, we have real-life stories, we have documentaries, social commentary. So something for every taste. And so each publisher selects the comics that they would like to participate in the project in order to show this variety.
Okay, so. Yeah, I get you. Yeah, so it's a sort of... What comics come out of Turkey? Have you? What am I unaware of? Turkish comics.
In Turkey, we have the rights agent Akan Ajans, who translates Franco-Belgian comics into Turkish.
Oh, I see.
And
okay,
their
yeah.
role in the project is to promote European comics in Turkey. So.
Right, I get you. Okay, I see. So we've reviewed a few of your books,
yes,
and you've sent
you
me even more. And
that.
And I don't think there's been a bad one in the bunch. I've loved them all. But what would be your So let's give us three that you would recommend, three that you really like. Now, I know
based on my personal taste.
Completely based on your personal taste.
So if based on my personal taste, I really like historical fiction. And okay. historical fiction specifically of the 20th century. And we've discussed before Jordi Lefebvre.
Oh, dear me.
Who
yeah.
is the...
So good. Yeah.
He's the loveliest artist from Spain. And so the book that we've discussed was Glorious Summer,
yeah.
Summers, written by Belgian scriptwriter Zidrou. So the two of them, they have another book. It's called Vice Squad. And it's a two-part book. And it's set in Paris before and during the Second World War.
Okay.
And it's a story of... I don't remember the name of the main character, but he's working in the... in the police department in Paris, and he's being transferred to the Vice Squad of the Paris police.
I imagine that's quite a lively area to work in Paris. You know what I mean?
Yes, quite. So he develops this relationship with a prostitute. So there is that relationship there.
Yeah.
But there is also drama unfolding in his family with his father, and all of this is set against France being occupied by Nazi Germany. And it goes all the way to the events of 1942 when all the Jewish families were rounded up in the Paris Velodrome by the French police, ordered by the Nazis, of course. And so it's his story on the background of all the events that were unfolding.
Sounds awesome.
It's the complete opposite of Glorious Summers.
Yes, I was about to say that. That's going to be my next question. Yeah.
It's
really different because Glorious Summers is like a fun, playful holiday. Your family going on holiday, basically,
yeah.
and bickering. And with that little undercurrent of the parents splitting up, I know. But it's probably the best use of light I've ever seen in a comic as well.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Yeah.
And as I mentioned, I got really lucky. I met Jordi in Angoulême this year.
You emailed me that.
Yeah, I was so proud. I met him and we talked about both books because Europe Comics released Vice Squad 2 years ago, I believe, and
okay.
Glorious Summer Summers only came in this year.
Yeah, we got this three volumes of Glorious Summers.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's now the fifth one coming out in French, so we continue
up.
Translating
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
yeah. So I was telling to Jordi like how different.
Yeah.
How
yeah,
did you
yeah.
do it? And he said that yes, after Vice Squad, where they really told this tragic story of these horrible decisions this protagonist had to make as well. It's a really dark and tragic narrative. And so Jordi told me that after finishing that book, him and Zidrou decided that they needed to do something completely different, like just to get out of that.
I love the way that a lot of bande dessinée writers and artists have just one name. Like Topple or Cher or something. It's quite cool, isn't it? Yeah.
Pen names. They have their pen names. So Zidrou, his real name is Benoit. Oh, no, I'm not going to lie.
So. Okay, so right, so that's one from a list.
That's yeah.
What about number two? Give us number two.
Number two is the book that we've been promoting here at Thought Bubble. It's called Giant.
Yes.
And it's the story of Irish immigrants who were building the Rockefeller Center in the '30s in New York in the '30s. And again, that's what I really love about these type of books is that it's personal stories told. Set against the background of all the
something we don't do enough in American and English comics is that sense of history. I mean, a lot of your, even the westerns and the Roman epics that you do have that history background to them.
There is always the history background, and I love discovering history through these narratives, these personal narratives. So Giant is the story of this man who is one of the men building the Rockefeller Center. He is in charge of delivering very sad news to the family of one of his colleagues who dies during the construction. However, he makes the decision of not telling them the truth. And so he sends the wife of the dead man some money and a typed letter. And then he continues getting into this web of lies. And then the wife decides to come to New York with the children to see her husband, who is actually dead, but she doesn't know. So there is this whole intrigue there, and then you get to know why this man made this decision, and you learn a lot about his past. And it's, again, I don't know why I'm choosing these tragic stories, but there is just something really beautiful.
You also have a tote bag. You also have a tote bag with that on, because you were waving about earlier.
We'll
have a tote bag over here. Yeah. Okay, that's two down. What about the third one?
Oh, I didn't prepare for the third one, did I?
I'd surprise you with this question anyway. What do you think?
What else can I, from my personal...
Eagles of Rome?
But you know what? You've discussed already on your podcast, The Muse.
Yes, I love The Muse, honestly.
Yeah. Oreo is the other...
When he's in the park and the kid comes up to him and goes, good art is like drawing something and then, was it exaggerating it or something, I think is the phrase he uses. It's like this artist who spends his life worrying about his art, and he's had it perfectly encapsulated by this kid who just wanders up to him in the park. So good.
The artist is stunning. And again, the same duo, Zidrou and Auriol, they made another book called Bearskin.
Yes, I read it this week. Yeah, loved it.
Have you?
Yeah, loved it. Yeah. I read it last weekend, actually. Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah,
and again,
when it starts with the old man at the start and stuff. Really.
Exactly. Yeah, and the jumping from one place to the other—it's you have to see it. It's very hard to describe it.
Yeah, it is.
But it's just a combination of the story.
Kind of a caricature style in a way, but it's got that sort of real sort of gritty grotesqueness to it in certain aspects. But a real sort of street life, a real setting sense to it.
It's very, very different from the traditional Franco-Belgian school, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what I find so attractive about it as well, like just something different. Like, as much as I love the classic, good old Franco-Belgian stuff, you do wonder what else is out there. And
talking to the muse, so the story of the muse is a guy, he's got a muse. It starts off a little bit saucily on a rooftop, and then it ends up, everything he draws starts to disappear, doesn't it?
Exactly.
And he's beginning to wonder if he's imagining it. Yeah. Even like down to like he's drawn his budgie or something, or a lump of fruit, and he's accusing the cleaner of nicking it.
His oranges.
Oranges.
Oranges go missing. Did you know what? Like, I feel it really depends on the reader. When do you realize what's going on? And I think it took me a bit too long.
Me too.
Some readers...
You're carried away with the art, though, in it, aren't you? You know,
it's just mesmerising, isn't it?
The scene on the rooftops is with the sky above them. It's the most beautiful thing.
It's the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
So, I mean, I keep returning to Zidrou, but you asked me for my personal
that's it. We've chatted quite a lot this weekend. Fine. So what have you got coming out?
Okay.
What's the sort of plan the next few months?
So the few titles I wanted to highlight for coming out in the next months is one of them is called Empress Charlotte. And this is a comic book that was written by Fabien Nouri, who you might know from The Death of Stalin.
Oh, right. I watched that the other day. I love that film.
So
that's the darkest film ever.
darkest and funniest, isn't
it? Yeah.
So the book was originally published by Dargaud in France. It's called The Death of Stalin. And we've then had the book in the Europe Comics catalog, so it was available digitally through us. However, later on, the rights have been bought by Titan. So okay. Titan actually have the printed version of the book. And then, yeah, the Armando Iannucci film was the cherry on the top.
Steve Buscemi is brilliant in it. I don't think I've ever seen him so good. Yeah, it's just bizarre, isn't it? It's a strange film.
Oh, the whole ensemble, Michael Palin and everyone.
Michael Palin is almost the best thing in this major movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, so good.
It's fantastic. So Fabien Nouri is the scriptwriter of the original graphic novel.
Yeah.
And so next month we have another book by Fabien Nouri. And it's about the Princess Charlotte of Belgium.
Okay.
Oh, it's sorry, I should say it's similar to The Death of Stalin in a way that it's actual historical events.
Okay.
However, slightly fictionized.
Right, good.
Well, you can't say slightly fictionized about The Death of Stalin, especially all the conversations they were having and the language they were using.
What's the biggest lie is a documentary. There's that quote, isn't there? Was it Herzog said it or something like that? And I kind of like that, you know. Yeah, we never really know, do we?
But, you know, they do put a disclaimer in the beginning of the book that, you know, this is based on actual events. However, the authors did allow themselves to create. So Princess Charlotte is the story of the real Princess Charlotte from Belgium, who got married at a very tender age of 16 to an Archduke from Austria and very quickly got entangled into the world, the dark world of international diplomacy. And sort of you can see her developing and changing internally from this naive little girl into somebody very skeptical and not as, how do you say,
cynical
is the right word. And at the same time her marriage is kind of falling apart, but she and her husband both have these ambitions to become the emperor and empress of Mexico, because this is all taking
me too
who doesn't Because this is all taking place. I'm not going to lie, which year it is exactly.
Okay.
But
what sort of period is this? Excuse me for not knowing my Belgian history.
Well, now I'm embarrassed because I don't remember.
That's okay.
It's definitely before the 20th century.
Oh, okay, right, fine. Yeah. Go.
So, the book was illustrated by Mathieu Bonhomme.
Right.
Who also has another series with Europe Comics called Esteban, and it's some marine adventures.
Okay, cool.
He also drew a book called The Man Who Shot Lucky Luke, which was I don't know if this is a word in English, homage.
Yes, okay, it is.
To Lucky Luke, who was celebrating 70 years, was it two
really?
Years ago?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's one great title. You should really check the art, and I think you saw the cover on Instagram.
Okay, yes, I think you do, yeah.
So we have this book that we're really looking forward to, and then another beautiful book that we have is called Eagles with No Claws, and it's a story about a man who, the story takes place in 1907, and this man becomes... my English.
That's okay, no, take your time, it's fine.
He becomes very passionate about the idea of becoming a contestant in the Tour de France. So he trains for that. However, then he faces an accident and he becomes handicapped. However, he continues to pursue his dream of becoming a professional cyclist, not only becoming the professional cyclist, but actually winning the Tour de France. The war starts, and so the man faces a lot of adversity and a lot of challenges on his way. So the book is just a testament to the human spirit and what you can do despite your physical limitations.
And that's color again, is it? Or?
Yes. So this is going to be a graphic novel. Sorry, I should have mentioned that the previous one, the Prince Emperor Charlotte, is going to be a series. It's going to be a continued story.
Oh, brilliant.
Whereas Eagles with No Claws is a graphic novel.
Oh, okay.
And it's written by another very prominent French author whose name is Lax.
Okay, real.
I will make sure to send you some.
Yeah, oh, we'd love to. Yeah, you know what we're doing. Yeah. We read everything you send us. Yeah, we love it. Yeah. So where can we buy your stuff from? Where we can find, where can we find you online, and where can we find Europe Comics, etc.?
So first place to go is www.europecomics.com.
Yeah, sign up for the mailer. I'm all signed up.
Please.
It's a good mailer because you actually send stuff out. I sign up for loads of mailers and you never send them.
We have three different newsletters. We have our general newsletter that we send out to all of our followers. Then we also send out a newsletter to reviewers like yourself,
yep,
where we offer because the books are digital, so it's quite easy to navigate that. And then we also send another newsletter to librarians and professionals, to sort of offer comics that are more tailored for educational purposes. So yes, please do sign up.
That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
That's great.
Yeah. And I've read a couple of the books she recommended there. Vice Squad. You've read some of it as well, Dan, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It's pretty
all
lively.
Punches.
It doesn't, but it's so well drawn. It's I highly recommend it, yeah.
Is that the Enrico Mancini, he doesn't do the chores on that one, but following him on...
Yeah.
See him on Twitter and Instagram, and when he's inking and doing the watercolors on these pages, fantastic.
We just each other in backwards and forwards a week, haven't we? Just incredible.
Yeah,
He's got quite a good grasp of English as well. Let's try and get him on.
Yeah, just so we can tell him we love him.
yeah. Is it possible just to dry hump his leg on audio?
Oh, let's
see.
How would that sound, Dan?
I'm not giving you any more audio.
And yeah, you're quite wise about that, Dan.
And thanks a lot for the presents, Arena. Which you gave us, tote bags, books. I've got two books for Vince. Got some stuff for Dan.
I cannot wait. Content. Yes, yeah, very, very kind. Thank you very, very much. Yeah. And Thought Bubble sounds amazing. And next year, who knows? There might be more of us there.
I was sending you saying, "Come on, you! Come on, you!" You've got to come along next year.
Oh yeah, sounds absolutely fantastic. Mm. I would love to go.
Yeah.
I'm not sharing a room with you again, Vince, but yeah. Oh, let's go.
You love it. Anyway. So yeah, that was Thought Bubble. But Dan, you wanted to mention just something.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of a bit annoyed about the middle of the week, and I sound like a right entitled twat fucking argue, like bitching about a TV series, but I got through the Iron Fist series too.
Yeah. And I think it's quite important that the first thing you said is I got through it. That's kind of not what you want to say about a TV show, is it?
Yeah. And also, if you haven't watched it yet and you're going to watch it, then just fast forward a couple of minutes and we'll have finished bitching at it. Yeah.
Well, we got through to episode 9, me and my wife, and she said, right, I'm not watching the next one. I've got no interest in seeing episode 10, which is quite telling. And essentially, they tell a story in it, which I feel like you could tell that story if you was in season 5 or 6 of a sort of hero kind of giving up his powers and then going off to find himself. But in this, essentially, like Danny Rand gives up the Iron Fist and then goes off to find himself. And it's like we're in season 2 of this series and you're kind of just absolutely shipping the character. And essentially he gives it to his girlfriend, his power, the one thing that sort of...
And my problem with that is she is a character unto herself and a really interesting character in the comics. Mm. Why do we have to make her into the Iron Fist? I really like her character.
Yeah.
You know.
It's because she has to have a superpower or something to get her own TV series. I mean, the latter half of the series essentially just focuses on Colleen Wing and Misty.
Yeah, who are the brother and sister who...
Ward and...
The
other one, but
is it Ward? He has the most uncomfortable. Well, there's two really uncomfortable sex scenes in it, and he has one where he's sort of lifting a girl up and down on himself.
Yeah,
like that. And I thought, what the fuck is that? the other bit is that bloke who sounds like he occasionally every fifth word sounds like he's from Oldham. And he has this sort of really uncomfortable sort of seduction of this woman on a couch, and it's like, oh my god, it's like watching your parents have sex. It's like just
But like. The character is supposed to spend virtually the majority of his life training to become a living weapon in this kind of monastery full of like the top martial artists in the world ever.
Yeah.
And then he sort of has to take lessons from his girlfriend who's taught kids martial arts. And it's kind of like, what? It's just like a real kind of disrespect
But it also sort of suddenly takes a turn that way, and you start spotting that's what's going to happen. And you're like,
I mean, I haven't watched it, but from what I gather, it starts pretty strong. The series
starts. It does. That's frustrating.
That in the start of it, he takes out like an armored car with his fist at the start of it. And I thought, right, good. Here we go. This is good. And she's really good in it. She has some really good fight scenes.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, everyone's stepped up here. This is really good. And then suddenly you're like, oh, and it takes this sort of weird turn.
Because how can you, like, as a character, a central character, the first series he's trying to sort of find out where he fits in this kind of modern world, and then the second part just finds out he sort of comes to the realization, I don't want these responsibilities and I don't think I'm worthy of them, so I'm going to run away from them. It's like, I don't find that particularly a sympathetic kind of character trait. Not really interesting the way it's presented, at least. It just doesn't come across.
I have to say, without, let's not spoil the final minute of it, because it does, something does happen.
Yeah, there's a bit of redemption in that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, and it almost pulls it back for me, and I'm like, oh, because anyone knows my interest. Iron Fist, one of my favourite comics, and the bit, the way it goes in that last minute is like, oh, fucking hell, this looks good.
Because there's a bit like in the last episode, I think, when Davos, his sort of trainee mate from Kunlun, is sort of berating him for never choosing a path and not doing anything with what he's been given, and that's essentially like bang on the nose. Like, with that, it's very frustrating that the writers treat the character that way. I mean, if it's, you got a TV series or a series about a character, and then suddenly you kind of just we're sidelining them and focus on a side character, it's just a bit, I don't know, disheartening and frustrating.
I suspect they're trying to turn Cage, because I think Netflix in a couple of years will have lost the Marvel license, because it'll be going to this Disney streaming thing. I think that's, from a business sense, that's got to be the way it goes. And I think what they're doing is they're going to conclude it by having Cage as the villain. Because at one point, Misty says, I need you about, you're the only person who can take him down, or something like that.
Yeah.
And at the end of Cage 2, season 2, he becomes a sort of slightly going over to the dark side, you know, nightclub and stuff.
Well, he sort of says he's got to kind of be controlling the criminal underworld to make sure it doesn't get out of whack. But there's, in that series, Iron Fist turns up for like half an episode.
That's, and the, it's best great episode.
It's the amazing best episode. Like, you see this, the kind of like the bonding between the two, and they sort of like this East and West. It's really well done. I thought, this is great. If Iron Fist season 2 is like this all the way through with a character like this, it would be fantastic. But this goes all out the window.
Heroes for Hire. That's what it should be. It should be Heroes for Hire, which is such a good idea. Like, great. But to me, like, Cage is, it's in the comics, is like this sort of, he's almost like the heart and soul of the Avengers now, and of, you know, this sort of, you know, he's this sort of moral, like, family guy, and they're just throwing it out.
I don't know. If you would have spoken to me during the week, I'd have been a lot more vitriolic on it, but just kind of, fucking hell, I just can't be bothered with it. It's just really, I think they handled that very badly.
But, I think they were worried that he got such a bad rep in season 1. They'll go somewhere else with it. I think that's kind of, to me, what's happened, you know?
Yeah, I just think they've just done it a real disservice, even worse. I don't know, a lot of people seem to like it, so I could be in the minority.
But... Yeah. Probably.
Interesting times. So there you go.
Will you watch it, Vince? Do you think? Will you get around to it?
I haven't watched Luke Cage 2 yet.
Right, okay. So I've got high hopes for Daredevil, and I've got high hopes for Punisher.
I think the next one I watch will probably be Daredevil, and Punisher seems to be its own thing, so.
Yeah, it's out in a couple of weeks, Daredevil, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I preferred the 10 episodes over like the 12 or 14, whatever they do.
Yeah, I did as well, actually. Yeah, I really did.
They always seem to stick in, oh, we don't have a lot of budget, so let's kind of do like two episodes, which are quite like sparse on content, or you just got filler in it.
Yeah.
All killer, no filler. That's what we want.
Much like these shows.
Yes.
Yeah. Bringing it back. So there you go. Dan just had to get that off his chest.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got feelings on that, let us know in the Awesome Comic Podcast group.
Yeah.
You know, we don't do too much TV chat. It's more comics.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. Good. Compare it to one of the comics.
Yeah.
It is in the Burn Run, where a lot of that happens, you know. So, there you go.
Nice
one. But speaking of comics and John Tucker.
Yes. Hello.
He treats himself like a newcomer, but, you know, you've been making comics since, how long did you say?
2010 I started. Well, I mean, like, I've been like drawing, I think, since before I could like write. You know, my mum was always like really keen to like get me drawing when I was a kid, so it's one of those things I've always been like, you know, doing. But yeah. I haven't done any art training. I've never been to school for art, which I think you can tell from looking at my books. they look all right, but
No, don't put yourself down. I love your art, and it's got its own style as well, which is, you know, which is the main thing.
Yeah. No, you are right. They are great. But you know, I've been like, you know, when I was living in Manchester, the first year I got there, because I went to university a few years later than I was supposed to, and me and a friend of mine got to Manchester Met, and we sort of went around the Freshers' Fair, and like we didn't really feel like playing soggy biscuit in the back of a rugby team van, so we didn't. So you know,
that's the first time I've heard soggy biscuit said on this show.
Dang, mark it up.
It's about time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we were looking around the fresh fair thinking, oh God, because we were both a little bit older and like, oh, you know, there's only so many times you can put a condom over your head and blow it up. So we were getting a bit bored. So, and we found a table, like the most like ramshackle, shitty table advertised in the student magazine. And we went along and we were on the editorial board that evening and we threw everything we had into it for a year. But the thing that it sort of impressed upon us is that no one's ever going to tap you on the shoulder and tell you it's time. You just have to get on with these things. You just have to start making things. It doesn't matter if you're the most qualified person for the job. We were never the most qualified people for the jobs we had at Pulp Magazine, but we were willing to do it and we were enthusiastic, and that counts for a lot more, I think. So then once that, you know, that wrapped up that year, and then as soon as that finished, I still had the urge to like make this like weird small press stuff. And there was a big community of that when I was living in Manchester. There was a big sort of, there was a big scene of like these weird little zines in like record shop windows and all that kind of thing. So I just started making these little weird comics under a fake name in case one day I was ashamed of them. It was incredibly prescient. And I was just, you know, giving them away. And I was doing that for a couple of years. And it's one of those things, like, I've always kind of, like, dabbled with it. But then, like, about a year ago, I thought, you know, it's, like, I think I could probably make a proper go of it. So I thought, I'll give myself a year to try it out. And if, like, I don't know what success looks like, but I'll know it when I see it. And it's a year on now, and I feel like it's gone pretty well. So, yeah, I'm not announcing my retirement from comics just yet.
Well, I think you're only just really starting. I mean, obviously this year is the first year that we've, you know, come into contact with your work, and immediately we became fans. I mean, anyone who does a book about a lighthouse keeper who's upset about people putting pubes into the sea is
personal favourite of mine.
A personal favourite. And your work definitely has its own voice as well, like narrative voice. So in terms of like, what is your process in terms of doing these books? You know, do you write a whole script or is it just scribbles and then writing dialogue from there?
It's usually a script. Because like my books are typically written sort of conversationally, it's usually someone telling their story in retrospect, or it's a couple of people having a conversation, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It'll usually start with like a picture or a premise or an idea. And that'll either be at the end or the beginning, you know, and then I'll just sort of flesh out from there. So for Night Watch, for instance, Night Watch, which is the pubes in the bay story we just discussed, that was based around the idea of, you know, what can I do with a lighthouse? Because, you know, if you look at my books, I think you can tell that I live where I live, because there's a lot of the sea and there's a lot of coastal scenes, you know. It is, I feel like there's a lot of whales running through my books, you know what I mean? So and like with Night Watch, that was based around like Mumbles Pier here in Swansea. Okay. I thought, what can I do with this? And that was just me banging my head against the wall. What's the weirdest story I can get out of a lighthouse? Just a lighthouse. What's the weirdest thing I can get out of it? Whereas something like Bald, for instance, that started out with an ending I couldn't find a beginning for a long time. Until I had to sort of work backwards with Bald to the start point, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's usually a lot of writing and then a lot of like loose scribbling on an iPad Pro, and then it's, you know, just inks, colours off to Mixam, and then it's people picking them up at conventions, smiling politely, then walking away.
But you stick yours up for free to read online a lot of the time, don't you?
A lot of them I do. Yeah. I mean. Adrift, I didn't, because one, I wanted to make money at Thought Bubble, and two, I feel like a lot of the jokes in Adrift only really work if you're looking at the pages together.
Okay.
And I couldn't think of a clean way to show that without people's eyes flitting forward and backwards, which I wouldn't be able to do with the book. The first two chapters of my graphic novel are up there for free. The next one that's coming out from me isn't going to be online either, because that, again, I think relies on the print edition. But, you know, I've got no aversion to putting my comics up for free online. I don't think it's harmed sales, really.
Yeah.
But no, I think it helps, especially when you're new at it. I think it helps for people to be able to have a look and see what you're about, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, okay.
So do you work digitally then?
Yeah, it's all digital, yeah, everything.
Oh, nice one.
But you do your death roulette, that's all pen and ink. I mean, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer wearing, working in, pen and ink?
It's different because, I do prefer working digitally just because... You know, it's so freewheeling. You can try anything. You know, if you try something daring on a piece of Bristol board, then you're down a couple of quid and an unusable piece of Bristol board, right?
Yeah.
If you try something daring on the iPad Pro, you just tap two fingers and it's gone, right? So that's better, I think, for doing, especially the kind of books I make where, you know, sometimes there are funny panels in it or things that are shot from a weird angle. But Death Roulette. Which is my convention sketch game. So just as for anybody who isn't aware of what Death Roulette is, at my convention appearances, we've got a small toy roulette wheel, and it costs £5 to give it a spin. And whatever number you land on, the numbers correspond to 37 different improbable modes of death I've got hidden under the table. And then... You come back in 10 minutes when it's finished, and you only find out how you died once it's all bought, paid for, and handed over.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Amazing. So that's been a real sales driver at conventions. I almost didn't take it to Cheltenham. That was like a B-list idea that I nearly scrapped, and I'm very glad I didn't now.
Oh, nice.
Because it becomes a point of a reference for you as well. Like when people are at shows are like, oh, he's got that death roulette table. And, you know, because I know I missed out on Cheltenham. And as soon as I discovered that such a thing existed, I immediately sort of harassed you at Cardiff to get one.
Well, that's the thing. And it's one of those things that does kind of, it does provide its own momentum. Because especially at Cardiff, like one of the helpers at Cardiff got one. And then we found another helper was coming up and another helper, because they were showing them to each other and going, oh, yeah, it's over there. Yeah. So it's one of those things that kind of, it sort of deals with its own sort of word of mouth. It's really been a godsend at conventions, and it's a lot of fun to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so if he might stop it in a couple of years when he's done so many that he just doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah,
so...
it's hard work at a table as well, dude. Yeah. It's sort of
No, it's fine. It can get a bit frantic when we got a queue of four people, and you know, we're having to tell him it's going to be half an hour. And at one point in Cardiff, we had so many not to boast on it, but we had so many waiting at one point, we had to take pictures because I'd forgotten what people looked like, and I had to just catch a glimpse of them as they were walking past. It can be a bit frantic behind the table sometimes, like doing these, but I'm very fortunate because, you know, my missus comes to the conventions with me and is dealing with the public while I'm working. I think if I was on my own, it'd be a lot more difficult, but I really enjoy doing them because, you know, I mean, the main thing is I pick the deaths, so if there's any deaths I don't like drawing, they're gone by the next convention. Right. There's been a couple that have only seen one show outing and then they've retired because I don't like doing them. But we retire the deaths every year. So whoever's had one this year now, those deaths will never be repeated. It'll be all fresh for 2019. It's partly, you know, out of respect for the class of 2018, and it's also in the hopes that the class of 2018 will feel obliged to buy another one in 2019.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's good fun. I mean, I've really enjoyed doing it, and touch wood, I haven't seen anyone else doing it yet, so that's always a big bonus.
Yeah, when it becomes mainstream, you just stop doing it. You're the original and the best.
Well, if anyone else does start doing it, you know, it's not the end of the world, but if I do see someone else at a convention with a roulette wheel, I'm going to crack them on the fucking jaw.
You'd be totally justified.
And that's not a joke. I will crack you on fucking, if you rip my gimmick off, I will crack your fucking skull. Honest to God. That'll be you done for.
I'll get you straight on Bleeding Cool as well. It's probably quite a good sales.
Yeah.
Try it.
So.
As you violence can... on the Awesome Comics podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this may be used as evidence against you. No, but, like, obviously you skew towards, like, humour books and things like that. You know, has that always been the genre that you've been more interested in doing work for? Or are there other more serious stories that you have to tell one day in the future?
Well, if there are more serious stories lurking in there somewhere, I haven't found them yet. I prefer to work like comedy-esque, you know, that kind of thing. I think I'm better suited to that. But the thing is, I've got this like long book that's been in the works for ages called The Floating Hand, which is like a Western B-movie crime spaghetti Western thing.
Yeah.
And I've had people who've read that, because the first two chapters of that are up on my website to read, and I've had people who've read that and come back to me and said, oh, a bit more serious in tone this one, John. And I realised what it is because the premise of The Floating Hand is ridiculous. It is patently ridiculous, right? But because the book goes long, you kind of accept that the absurdity of the premise gets sort of like forced into the bedrock of it. So once you accept that as normal and carry on reading, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, like the longer a book is, if it's built on a ridiculous idea, then the idea seems less and less ridiculous the further you go into it.
Yeah, it just becomes the norm, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure some people, well, I'm sure when The Floating Hand does come out, people will come out and say, oh, you know, it's a fantastic turn for John Tucker. You know, he's finally brought out a serious book, when I don't think it's serious at all. And I think anyone who does read it and take it as a serious book hasn't read it very closely.
Well, if you can kind of introduce that kind of crazy, strange premise at the start of the story, and that's the norm, and then you go from there, that's fine. But
that's common usual, isn't it? Really, yeah. Let's face it. Yeah, yeah.
If everything's normal, and suddenly there's something really weird going on in the middle of the story, everyone's like, "Oh, what the fuck?"
It's Yeah, but I like what the fuck. I really like what. What the fuck is my bread and butter? You can quote me on that. I wouldn't have a career in comics without what the fuck.
Yeah.
See, I think what people don't realise is you do have a sort of vague alter ego, don't you, as a creator, which is self-evident in your author banner that you've got.
Oh, I knew the banner was coming up.
Yeah.
Yes. How to could me, it not be? It's my favourite banner.
It's the sexiest banner. Yeah.
There is like an Andy Kaufman-esque element to the banner, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I was wondering if that is something that you would extrapolate into a sort of autobiographical... You know, a lot of people do autobiographical comics, but they're kind of not them, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? They're kind of a sort of strange, weird, sort of mixed up version of them. Is that something you'd consider?
Yeah. I find there are some people who do autobiographical comics very, very well.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever be one of them. It's a skill. You know what I mean? Writing capes is a skill. Like writing. You know, like fucking Andy Baron. I mean, Christ, that you know, Om looks like it was created off planet. You know what I mean?
It's
some of the weirdest shit I've ever seen in my life. But you know, it's so distinctive and it's great work. You know,
amazing.
It's fantastic. Autobiocomics. And I do know what you mean about like writing like an autobiocomic. You know, through the lens of the John Tucker that is on my roller banner.
Yeah, it's a sort of twisted personality, isn't it?
Yeah,
which
isn't me. Yeah, I mean, the roller banner, for those who haven't seen it, it's basically like an 80s glamour shot of me with, like, makeup and soft focus. And my wife put just enough makeup on me to make people go, Jesus, is he wearing makeup? Do you know what I mean? the roller banner came
about... That would make a great comic. Even that I would read as a comic. Do you know what I mean? Your missus putting makeup on you so you can do a fucking stupid banner. It's like...
it all comes from necessity. Like, all that stuff comes from necessity because, like, we got told, after Cheltenham, you've got to have a banner,
Right.
And I'd taken like the pulse of like the landscape of banners. And
who said this? I mean, obviously we've said it a lot of times that a banner always helps.
Yeah, a banner always helps. Emily Owen said it to me. She said, you know, it would help if you had a banner. and a couple of other people at Cheltenham sort of said to us in passing, it might help if you had a banner next time. Although that said, the people next to us, I think it was Kat and Meringue who were next to us at Cheltenham, they set their banner up, and then the person who was on the opposite corner to them, while they were setting their banner up, put the spike of their banner straight through the middle of their fucking roller banner. They were much politer about it than I would have been. But like, here's the thing, I hate roller banners, right? I don't like, I think they look tacky and cheap and horrible. I don't like them. They're horrible.
Right, all you're doing is talking me into wanting to see, because the fact that you have got a moral dislike of roller banners is also another page in your autobiography that would make me laugh.
I don't like them, so I thought I can't really, and it's not as if I've got like, I'm not Joe Glass, I haven't got like the pride, I'm not Sarah Millman, I haven't got MPCT, I haven't got a running series to feature on my banner. It's like someone who's too bald, pubes in the bay, taxi driver. these aren't banner worthy topics, do you know what I mean? But that's it. But then, so I thought, right, well, if it's not going to be that, it's going to have to be something else. So I thought, I'll do this horribly, like, overly slick banner, and hopefully that will act as a filter to the table. Yeah. So if you don't like the banner, don't even bother coming up and see the comics.
Because the tone of humour is immediately in the banner as well, isn't it? It's sort of like, if people get it, then they're going to be able to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, the banner, I would say, is like, is a good bellwether for whether or not you're going to like anything on the table.
Plus, it's sexy as fuck.
That's true,
I mean, when you're done with it, can you give it to Vince?
Laminate it first.
We are doing another banner for 2019, and I was thinking about what to do with the old one.
Yeah, it's like when Take That do a calendar every year. I kind of think of it in the same sort of.
Well, we've already drawn up the plans for the 2019.
Oh, brilliant.
Amazing.
It's much worse.
I mean,
I was thinking of running like a promotion on my web shop of being like, oh, free gift for the next purchase, and it's a fucking massive roller banner that they're just going to keep in their house and put up or whatever.
Like a white elephant.
We love it. We do love a roller banner. Vince surprised us with a new one recently. We do love them, don't we?
Yeah. All jokes aside, obviously you've got your sort of a banner, but I think it brings up the interesting topic of like banners for creators rather than books. I always think that's, you know, I did one for myself that I only brought out a couple of times, and then I kind of felt uncomfortable about the banner because it felt a little bit, I don't know, there was a certain amount of, it just felt like it was
sort of self-marketing type.
Yeah, thing, it was more of an ego trip sort of thing. Yeah.
You're the only person who thought that. That never occurred to me though. You know what I mean? They literally never did.
It occurred to me when I was thinking of making one. I thought, I don't want one that's done seriously. And it's like, look at me, everybody. Yeah. So I thought, I'm going to make this fucking horrible one. That's like, right, look at this. Look at this. I don't. Look at it. You know what I mean?
Look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is interesting. I mean, obviously, when you get a lot of, writers and artists that work for like the big two or big companies or whatever, normally it's just like a panel, isn't it, from one of their comics and just their name on it. And, if you're a name, that's perfectly fine. I tried that experiment. I don't think I could do one again now, just for me.
You had one?
I had one, yeah. Well, I've got one.
You brought it along, didn't you? Yeah. Hey?
When did you have that one?
I used it at Cardiff 16. Yeah, Cardiff 16, I think. I've used it for a couple of shows. But now,
I can't remember where that was now. Was it Melksham or someone like that?
I think it was Melksham. But I think once we started getting like the Awesome Pod banner and we got the Awesome Comics banner, you know these things were, I guess I just felt less comfortable because it didn't have like John's banner is immediately a talking point. It's a joke. It's, you know, that's in hindsight, it probably would have been better to do something like that. Whereas I just felt, you know, even though I think it was my business card that I adapted.
Picture I took of you where you're holding a banana. I think that'd make a good one.
Oh, don't, because I look like a sex offender.
Oh, you know the one you got to use.
What?
You know the one.
Oh, no, we're not talking about that
here. The one of you coming out of the toilet in Swindon.
No. No. Jesus Christ. Can you see, John? I'm the one that gets bullied. Don't tell me that Dad...
For doing a plop.
No, I did not.
To be fair, it does sound like you did. So
you weren't there. You don't know what it's like.
Go with it.
Is everyone dead silent, just listening to you?
Yeah.
In the bathroom, then you come out and there'd be a round of applause.
Do you know what? Do you know what?
Rather intimidating now, I'd imagine, Vince.
I haven't been the same since. I just can't go to any toilet without worrying that Tony's going to be there when I open the door.
Give yourself a little round of applause.
Yeah.
You're done. In the air. That's it.
Yeah.
Speaking of doing poo, as we were, I noticed that you've just done Dead Singers. Dead Singers 4, haven't you, John?
Yes, yeah, I did. Yeah, I've got one in the Good Comics Dead Singers 4 anthology. Yeah, yeah.
And that man was prone to doing a dump on stage, wasn't he?
Yeah, that man was G.G. Allen. Yeah,
fucking
he was
mad.
Yeah, he was. That's probably like the most succinct way you could describe G.G. Allen. He was fucking mad.
Did he pass away this year? Was
that a while ago? I think
93. G.G. Allen passed away.
Fucking hell! I got that wrong.
The reason I'm doing that is because he's in the old Kurt and Courtney documentary, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's where I saw him. But I think when I wrote the review, I think I wrote something along the line, I can think of no other dead singer that would be more suited to John Tucker, which is kind of better.
For listeners who don't know G.G. Allen, do you want to describe him, John?
Yeah, sure.
One of his stage performances, for instance.
Yeah, G.G. Allen was a club crooner. No, G.G. Allen was a punk rock frontman. Basically, the music, his records were okay. Like, he had a compilation album out called Hated in the Nation, which was very good, but the music is not what he's famous for, because what G.G. Allen was famous for was coming onto the stage in a white jock strap and, you know, this like little devil beard and mustache, and the band would start up playing. Someone in the crowd would push him. He would immediately throw the microphone on the ground, take his jockstrap off, and start fighting with the crowd.
Yeah.
He would shit on the stage and throw that into the crowd. Like, if you look on, there's a great video, because I looked up a lot of, like, I'd seen G.G. Allen before, but I looked up a lot of, like, performance footage as research for the comic. And there's one show, it's called something like, you know when people put, like, full concerts up on YouTube?
Yeah.
It was called, like, G.G. Allen and the Murder Junkies, Pittsburgh Truck Stop, 4th of April, 92. And then in square brackets, full show audience cam. It was 4 minutes long, the video, right?
Yeah.
Because what used to happen at G.G. Allen shows is he would get on stage, either take a shit or punch somebody, or somebody would punch him. He'd be rolling around, covered in blood, and then the shit. And then the promoter, thinking this would placate G.G. Allen, would just, like, cut the power, which only made him worse. And then, you know, there's plenty of reading material out there about G.G. Allen for those that are interested, including a full video of his funeral on YouTube.
Yeah, there's kind of a conspiracy theory, if you watch that Kurt and Courtney movie, that he was hired by Courtney Love to kill Kurt Cobain, wasn't there? There's this sort of strange conspiracy.
No, that was someone else, I think.
Oh, was it? It's a while since I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, the fella that was, I forget his name, but he died on a train track not long after the film.
Right.
But, apparently one time the head of Sub Pop Records took Kurt Cobain to meet G.G. Allen in prison. He thought it'd be a nice thing for Kurt Cobain to meet G.G. Allen. And, like, Kurt Cobain was big news at the time, so they assumed Allen would know who he was. He didn't. He spat on Kurt Cobain and tried to fight him and had to be restrained by prison officials.
But
yeah,
to totally turn it on its head, which is your trademark, if you don't mind me saying, you have him trying to read spoken word poetry.
Yeah,
is that something you made up for the story, or is that something that actually happened? Or
I'm very flattered you think that might have happened. No, that I made that up. I totally made that up. Hold off.
What are you doing? And then he just kicks off, doesn't he?
Because, like, that's the thing with G.G. Allen. Because I did a manar about whether or not to pick him, because he was such a contentious figure, and, like, you know, he got arrested a bunch of times for not very nice things. But the thing is, with people like G.G. Allen, you're dealing more with, like, the myth of G.G. Allen. And, you know, he's been dead for so long, and he's impervious to hyperbole. Like, you can't say anything about him that there isn't, like, a worse true story anyway. And I thought it would be fun to, like, have a play around with the legacy of G.G. Allen. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's what that was. But I was really happy with it. I had two ideas in mind. One was the one I went with, and the other one was, like, a G.G. Allen concert in full swing, and then he looks out on the room, and it's a bunch of kids in 1950s prom dresses, And he says, it might be a bit early for you, but your kids are going to love it. And it was going to be the Back to the Future thing.
But, well, sadly, that's the last volume of Dead Singers. I got to review it this week. They sent me a preview copy. But it is a fucking... Gareth Hopkins is in it as well. There's a load of other great people in it. Yeah. It's well worth a look. It's a fucking really good anthology. So their idea is they say, right, who wants to do a story for Dead Singers? And then people just think of a dead singer and then do a story on them. And that's the only sort of caveat, is they have to have been deceased, you know.
And they can't have already been done. That's the only other rule.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really... Alan Henderson's been in it. All sorts of our friends. Loads of our friends have been in it. It's really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You wrote about that on your latest blog, didn't you, Tony?
Yeah. It's well worth looking out for, yeah. They're all good, actually. Good comics, you know. They're good people.
Yeah.
But it's a really fun one. Fucking hilarious, some of it as well. And some of it, I think, is done in that sort of punk fanzine kind of thing. The way they do it, and it's, you know, you used to get these sort of throwaway punk magazines in the 70s and 80s that used to get printed on a, you know, the work photocopier, and there was only about 10 of them, and they had this sort of really sort of black and white aggressive sort of art about them. A couple of stories done like that as well, and it really brought it back to me how good that stuff was. Yeah. And there's loads of singers in there I didn't know about. There's an Australian one, a lady I didn't know about. I should definitely go in to look up to see what it's all about. Yeah, good stuff it is. Really good.
I think it's interesting, like you tackling sort of like real life sort of subjects, John. I mean, one of your pieces of work that provided some of my biggest laughs was the gang culture in 1950s Swansea.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Now, reading the back of this book, it's the Swansea Legacy Society is dedicated to preserving the city's living memory through storytelling, visual art, and the printed word. Mm-hmm. The Illustrated Oral History series pairs our extensive interview archive with local artists, taking our most vivid recollections and bring them to life with sequential art and illustration. Wonderful. You know, it's highbrow. It's taking, you know, it's discovering the past in a wonderfully visual way. I wasn't prepared for what you did, John.
No, most people weren't.
For those who don't know about it, how can you describe that little book? Because I find it quite unusual compared to it was less sort of a sequential narrative than your other work, and it's a little bit different.
Yeah, gang culture in 1950s Swansea. Like as I said before, most of my books are to be read with a Welsh voice. Like I write them in like the voice that I associate with like men of my father's generation. You know, that kind of very, very dry, you know, God, can you believe it kind of style, you know. I think it's really funny. I think there is a Welsh style of humour that is possibly like a little bit underrepresented. Because if you think of like Scottish comedy, people have even like English and Welsh people have a fair idea of what Scottish humour is.
Yeah.
You know, like there is a definite style of humour in Scotland. I think it's the same in Wales, but I think because there isn't like the television representation here in Wales, and you know, media representation being what it is, I don't think that style of comedy has really really had a good showcase. That's the thing about indie comics, isn't it? Like, because in indie comics you can do anything, and when I got into it I thought there was going to be other people doing what I do. Now there's a lot of very, very talented comic artists in Wales, obviously, right? But there wasn't really anybody doing like the hyper Welsh, hyper like kitchen sink surrealist stuff that I associate with Wales. So gang culture in 1950s Swansea, I thought it would be good to create like a fake book, right? So on the front it says the Swansea Legacy Society presents gang culture in 1950s Swansea, as told by Graham Ashford, illustrated by John Tucker, and there's a biography of Graham Ashford inside the front cover, right? The Swansea Legacy Society doesn't exist, and neither does Graham Ashford.
Oh, do you know what I love about that is I had no idea until this second, but the way you've treated the bits about Graham Ashford, there's these moments of like there's these black pages with just text, it seemed like they were the serious bits and then your art is the ridiculous telling of it.
No, it's all fictional.
This has just got 10 times better.
Well, the thing is, I've got prior form in this medium because in the village I come from, every year they have a scarecrow contest, right? Now, not to boast, but me and my father have won that scarecrow contest in the 11 and up category every single year that it has been running. Now, last year was we retired this year. We didn't enter this year, but last year we did this thing called King Crow, right? And we built a giant wooden skyscraper and put a big monkey-looking scarecrow on top, batting away biplanes with little crows inside. And we put a big write-up next to it with a fake film poster for King Crow. And we said that in the 1930s, the village, you know, was so impressed with moving pictures that were new in the village at the time that they decided to make their own film. And it was this film. And then somebody accidentally dropped the script in California and they changed it to King Kong. And this is a relic from the original film production, right? Now, as ridiculous as that is, and as ridiculous as it is if you actually see the scarecrow, the amount of people we had come up to us and ask, is that real? That was the best feeling in the world to me, like that someone could see something so fucking stupid and think there was any truth to it at all.
Yeah.
So gang culture came from that feeling of like wanting to put something out that was like a facsimile of these, because you know you've all been to these like these museums in these like seaside towns where it's just like a picture of one guy who did a bit of boxing in the 1920s. He's the local hero, and there's a load of like short run small press books about the town full of like local folklore, and I wanted to make something like that. There are little clues on the cover that it isn't real, like for instance the lighthouse from Night Watch is in the crest, the Legacy Society crest. Most of my books have got references to other books in them.
You like Stephen King.
just as like a little thing. But yeah, I mean like that, yeah, gang culture is an outlier in my back catalogue, but I think I've got a few more of them in me as well, because the amount of people who bought it not realizing that it's fake, look at the cover, look at the inside, and they don't read the rest and they buy it. To think how disappointed they're going to be when they get it home.
Oh God, no! Yeah. I mean, it's about a gang called the Bare Ass Boys,
Bare Ass.
I was going to ask you how that came about, but now I know they're completely fictional. It makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, good thing you didn't then, innit?
But I will say, if you haven't got that book yet, it has quite possibly the most shockingly hilarious last page that I'm not going to spoil that I've seen all year. It made me laugh out loud. So yeah, gang culture is definitely one to check out, because it doesn't look, you look at it and it's so different from your other books, isn't it? You know, the way you've presented it as well. It's not front and center, you know, I'm a sequential story. I think that's what's fascinating about it.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Like, a lot of my books aren't, like, they're probably, you wouldn't class them technically as comics.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, panels and speech bubbles. But, like, sometimes I've used that specifically to disguise the twist. Like Night Watch, for instance, was designed to look like a children's storybook, like soft pastel wash colours and text underneath, really clear printed text, because I thought that would go some way to hiding the ending, that people wouldn't see it coming. If it had like a familiar format of a children's book, then it wouldn't occur to people that, oh, this is going to happen in the end. Do you know what I mean? Like, I do go to great pains to try and hide the endings, even though I maybe don't have to, because I know... Yeah.
You did that with The Drift a bit as well, dude. When I reviewed it, I was careful not to reveal...
Yeah.
Because it just twists what you've been reading a little bit, doesn't it? It sort of changes it retrospectively, which really works well. We won't ruin it here, but it's worth thinking about. Definitely,
there's definitely a wonderful darkness to your storytelling. And like, so what are your influences in terms of, like, you know, narrative or storytelling?
Oh God, influences for comics. Shout out to Casey Green, the number one, the one and only Casey Green.
Okay.
He did the web comic. It's capital K, capital C, Green. He did the web comic Gun Show, right? And if you haven't heard of him, you have seen his work, because you know the cartoon of like a dog drinking coffee in a flaming room saying this is fine.
Yeah,
That's Casey Green.
Okay. All right. I'll look that up.
Gun Show. I mean, he's done stuff since. Like, I think he's doing the Invader Zim book. The comic that's in the works for that.
Oh right.
He worked on the Regular Show comic. He worked on the Adventure Time comic. But like his own work, he's done a book called Back, and He Is a Good Boy. But there was a web comic called Gun Show, that, like, because the thing is, like, when people talk about, like, the worst era in comics, I just I'll throw it out to the panel. What was the worst era in comics, unanimously considered the worst era in comics?
Well, everyone's
considered the 90s.
The 90s, yeah.
The 90s, yeah, incorrect. The worst era in comics was the mid-2000s webcomic boom. Thank you very much. Fuck me. Some of the worst material I've ever seen in my entire life. And the whole point of the webcomics boom, it was meant to...
Completely.
The whole point of the webcomics boom, it was meant to be, right, we finally wrestled control away from the gatekeepers. You can't keep this comic out of the newspaper anymore, granddad. And then it was just three-panel shit, two blokes on a couch swearing about video games. Who gives a shit? Right? So, like, the webcomics boom, like, here's the thing, I wasn't really, like, a Marvel or DC kid growing up. I didn't really have that stuff around because I'm like one of the last like people who remembers life before the internet, right? So basically it was whatever was in the newsagent or whatever was in W.H. Smith's, and then so that was like the Beano, like some Simpsons comics, like some of them were really good, but yeah. I didn't really have Marvel and DC growing up, so then my real first exposure to comics is when I got online and then when I started seeing like the web comic boom. And even then, I think I knew this is fucking dire, this is, right? But then, like, towards the late 2010s, like, between, like, 2005 and 2010, a couple of people really started putting good work out, and Casey Green was one of them. Like, I honestly think, right, and I don't know how much agreement I'm going to get from the community with this one, but I genuinely think that Gun Show is probably my favourite body of work of any comic artist, living or dead. Like,
really?
Because, wow, okay. And I think if you look at his stuff and then look at my stuff, it's not... like, it's not, like, visually, it's not an obvious pastiche, but I think if you look at his style and tone and then look back at myself, I think you can still see a thread of Casey Green's influence. Because looking at his comics and looking at, like, and another one was Kate Beaton of Haga Vagrant.
Yeah, okay. She's great.
Yeah, she's fantastic, right? And another thing that Kate Beaton does really well is, like, regional voice. So when she does comics about her family at Christmas and stuff like that, that's all, like, hyper-localized regional tone that I thought was, like, that's so good. Do you know what I mean? Like, that feels real. And I thought, like, oh, you can do that. You can put that in comics. It hasn't all got to be people wearing three pairs of sunglasses with two guns with four barrels on the end of each gun going, see you later, suckers, and then bang, bang, bang. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we haven't all got to be fucking Rob Liefeld or however you say it, right? So, yeah, so Casey Green, Kate Beaton, they were influences. Limmy, Scottish comedian Limmy, is a huge influence on me. I don't know if any of you... have any of you seen Limmy's show on Netflix?
Yeah, I'm aware of that one, yeah.
Yeah, like if you watch Limmy's show, like, and like everything he's done, like his book was fantastic, but like
he's got this great sketch about being smart casual. That
yeah, and they all get beaten up at the end. Yeah, yeah. Like, and but like the one Limmy sketch that I love. I love them all, but the one that really springs to mind is he's sort of like walking around like this barren industrial estate, and he's like bored and oh god, you know, and then he looks in like this overgrown grass. And he sees a wooden door in a frame in the grass, and a bit of mysterious music begins to play. And he reaches down and he turns the handle and he opens the door, and it's just more grass on the other side. There's nothing on the other side. Right? And he looks at the camera and goes, oh, fuck. And that's the end of the sketch. That's it. Right? So, like, and because, like, Limmy's someone who's not afraid to, like, disappoint. You know, as long as the journey is interesting, the ending hasn't got to be shit. Yeah. And that is something I try and live by every single day. But, you know, so yeah, Kate Beaton, Casey Green, Limmy, like weird films, fucked up films, you know, like all that kind of stuff plays an influence. You know, Wales plays an influence, you know, like, I don't know, all sorts, everything.
I think that's a good thing, as in make the comics you're making about you and the things you know and around you, as opposed to making it generic and try to get everyone to like it by being everything and nothing.
You're adding your own personality, aren't you? You're adding your own personality. And if you go, right, I'm going to do this like space comic, but it's about the planet Alderaan in the fucking such and such, you go, yeah, yawn, mate, see ya. You know what I mean? But if it's got a little bit of personality about it, then you go, oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think, like, it's like I said, like, the pull of indie comics is you can do literally anything. But I think, like, the draw, like, the pull to do something fantastical and otherworldly must be so strong.
Yeah.
But it's a draw that I've managed to resist.
Yeah.
Completely. I've done nothing like fantasy or nothing magical. It's just weird shit. That's all I've done.
But that's not because you don't like it. It's just purely, you know, the other stories are stronger, I guess. Do you think you'll do some sort of genre type story in the future? I mean, Lord knows what your take on sci-fi, you know, full on sci-fi or fantasy would be, but
you could do a Swansea superhero. I'd definitely read that from you, dude.
Yeah, and then I'd get a fucking cease and desist from Swansea Comic Collective. I think I'll pass on that one. but they're another good example. Like, they're doing like regional work, but it's in the genre. Do you know what I mean? So that you can see like Swansea tone and like Welsh tone in their work, but it is superhero and sci-fi and all the rest of it, and that works really well because you can tell that they know what they're talking about in terms of, like, you know putting comics together, but they're also coming at it from this like Welsh perspective. And so, like Copperopolis, I think, you know, it really, really works, you know. So it, you know, it has been done before. I'm not saying I invented comics about Wales, but
I can see you doing some proper creepy but funny sort of like horror type work, because some of your stories, it's like skirt that sort of nature anyway. You know, there's a real sort of a, you know, got that League of Gentlemen kind of vibe that's sort of like, this is funny, but this is pretty messed up.
Yeah. No, I agree.
What about a subgenre of Welsh erotic? Is that something you'd go for, maybe?
It would all depend on the market. It's all about market forces.
Yes, to see what the focus group says.
Yeah, the focus group, my wife and mum. Hey, they've never steered me wrong, boys. I'm telling you now, they've never steered me wrong. My old man couldn't finish a drift. He got to the old men blowing each other. He was like, oh, forget it.
I mean, there you go. You've already covered the genre, haven't you, with that one page? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, a drift, like, there would be a way of doing a drift that would be, like, hard sci-fi, where, like, gravity goes away. You know, that you could do a magical version of it. You could do, like a hard sci-fi version of a drift where, like, they're maybe, you know, trying to find the cure to no gravity, blah, 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 whatever, right? There's 50 different ways you could approach a drift, right? But the sort of the example I always come back to is there are two films about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, right? There is the film, The St. Valentine's Day Massacre, in 1967, where featuring young Jack Nicholson. Have any of you seen that film?
No, I've not seen that one.
No. The other film is Some Like It Hot. Right,
okay.
Those are two films about the same event. They use the same event as a turning point, but they go with completely different perspectives. And Some Like It Hot is by far, I would say, the more interesting of the two perspectives.
What you've done there, John, as well, is I've had enough fucking post-apocalyptic. As soon as anything goes wrong, everyone just goes and kills everyone. Like, you know, oh no, there's a meteor going to hit the earth, and then suddenly everyone just turns around and starts macheting each other. But what you've had there, you've had a moment of like, well, the world's going to change, and people have gone, well, this looks quite fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, there's a bit of that in there.
Well, if let's say, I don't know, let's say there was a zombie outbreak, or there was, you know, like a meteor heading for Earth. Maybe I'm just a bit too optimistic about society, but I don't think it would come to machetes and, you know, people riding around on horses with samurai swords. I don't think it would come to that, because people would still need each other to get by. And I think that was really, like, you know, not to go too like after school special with it, but if there was ever a fucking message to one of my comics, like, Adrift is, you know, everything's probably going to be fine. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Because
I know I agree with you. You know, like, I think people are too quick to take it to the obvious extreme, when there is another extreme that is actually less traveled and therefore more interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, oh, there's a new Ice Age, right? Okay, cannibals. You know what I mean? It's like that. Yeah, you know, it's like that. That's where they go with it, don't they? Rather than snowmen. Yeah, that's the two extremes in there, you know.
Yeah,
that's it, yeah. Instantly jump to cannibalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
snowmen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you know, Tesco's is out of bread, so yeah, cannibalism.
Yeah. Strictly's over. Right, fuck it, I'm killing my neighbours.
Mind you, saying that, just a little bit of bad weather and everyone's bought all the milk. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Panic buying does my head in. What?
Oh, we need to do a comic about you fucking just going feral.
like there's a post-apocalyptic world. Everyone else is dealing with it. I've gone feral.
You're fucking killing everyone with a fork in the throat because there's no bread in Tesco's. And it's like, yeah.
Where's my Warburton, you motherfucker? Other bread brands are available.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Anyway, yeah, your books are amazing, John. But obviously, you've done your last convention of the year with Thought Bubble.
I think that's probably going to be it. Yeah, I think the next one now is True Believers 2019.
Oh, ooh,
that's going to be good. We're there. That's
yeah. Oh, there we go. Marvelous.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that this appearance on the show will enable me to start charging exorbitant panel fees.
Panels pay.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll be paying. Don't you worry about it.
One way or the other.
I do laugh, mate, because I think you almost walked past me, didn't you, at Thought Bubble, and I shouted, "Oh, John." And you came over and you handed me a copy of Adrift, very kindly, thank you, mate. And you crossed John Tucker out and ripped Tony Esmond on it, and I went up down. Oh, yeah, you're still a wanker. Thank you, mate. It's very kind of you, mate. Thanks, sir. I did really enjoy that. And one of the things I did like about it is at the back you did a little bonus content. How many of the following items did you find?
Yeah.
Oil tanker, bowling ball, wheelie bin, chopping board, nuclear waste.
What was that, sorry?
Chopping board or nuclear waste. Yeah.
Well, are they the ones you didn't find?
I haven't looked yet. I will have a look though. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I will say this. Here's an exclusive for listeners of the Awesome Comics Podcast. One of those items isn't in the book. So I won't tell you which one.
Oh dear. So next year then, are you going to try and get out to more conventions after your first successful year?
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to. I mean, because the thing is, like, this year was basically the test balloon. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like if we'd done Cheltenham and Cardiff and Thought Bubble and we'd just, you know, eaten dirt and done shit, we probably would have reconsidered. But no, I mean, we probably will try and do like a few more conventions next year. We'd like to do Nottingham. I'd like to do Edinburgh. LCAF isn't
well,
one.
Actually, LCAF would be good, man. I think your books would suit LCAF as well. Well, I think you've got that cross appeal though. I think genuinely, I think you could fit in LCAF and at MCM and at True Believers. I think there's that. You know,
yeah, I've wondered about MCM because MCM's more, you know, capes and cosplay and that. Isn't
a little bit. I'd say it's a bit more sort of manga kind of type stuff as well, you know.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, because you've the sort of the funny nature of your books, I think you do find them, man. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's what I want to think about then. But yeah, no, we would like to do more conventions. Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
So, where can people buy your books?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. you can buy my books on my website. If you go to johntucker.co.uk and go to the shop page, you can get all my books from there. And funnily enough, would you believe it, I've actually put together for a limited time a bundle of all my comics called The Podcaster's Delight to commemorate my appearance on the show, and it contains Adrift, it contains Nightwatch, The Taxi, Bald, Gang Culture, and 950 Swansea. It's even got Hell in it, which I don't sell online, and I'm throwing in a free sketch, right? I've set the price of this bundle at £500, right?
That's a bargain.
Right, because I have got significant debts due to unrelated personal problems that I don't want to get into here, right? But I do have a discount code for listeners of the Awesome Comics Podcast, would you believe it? So if you at the checkout, if you enter the code AWESOME, all capitals, AWESOME, that will knock £490 off the Podcaster's Delight bundle. So that brings it down to a very reasonable £10, and that is a 98% discount, people. So,
what a discount.
This is a fire sale, folks.
That is so the first time we've ever had like an actual sort of like official bundle.
Yeah.
Well, why not? Yes, that's offer code AWESOME, all capitals, £490 off the Podcaster's Delight. Thank you very much.
I really hope it does say £500 on your website.
It does. You can go and have a look now. It says look, here's the thing. If you can't be bothered to listen to this show, then I consider the £500 a levy.
Well, quite all right too.
Nice one.
Yeah. You're coming back on, John. I'll tell you that now. Yeah.
I'd love to.
Yeah. and John's going to stick with us for the rest of the show because he's going to have a recommendation. Lord knows what that would be. But do we have any other shout outs, gents?
I got a few.
Go for it.
Yeah. First off, Norm Brayfogle. What a shame.
Yeah.
Really good artist. Yeah. Outstanding. I mean, I've got literally, as I record, I look to my left and I've got a Norm Brayfogle Batman commission they did for me. There you go. Yeah. He had the table next to, and this is not shameless selling because it is truth. He had the table next to Ed Trequino at New York Comic Con a few years ago. So I sort of had a coffee with him and all that sort of thing. And yeah, super nice guy. Yeah, really good.
Love his work on the Batman, stuff like that.
So good.
Really, yeah. He kind of had a real kind of get right personality to the character.
Yeah, he did. It was almost the edge of caricature, wasn't it? When he with the cape and the bats flying out and all that sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah, really good. Next up is Interspace, which is the new Nottingham Comic Con Kickstarter comic. Every year they do an anthology with a lot of people who turn up at the convention and people who are guests at it to raise money for charity. And I'm in it with Dave Brown. We've done a little story for it, and it's the anthology. And it's I think it's got a couple more days to run. They've hit their figure by now, but it's well worth looking at. Some cracking talent in there beyond me and Dave. So have a look at that one. That's called Interspace on the Kickstarter. Sean Jefferson, who I was chatting to at Thought Bubble, she's got a new book out, which is currently also storming it on Kickstarter, called Overlord. Is that, have any of you guys gone to
I've
that?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've pledged for that, actually.
Good man. Yeah, good. It's about a boy who accidentally becomes an evil overlord. Now, what else do you need? What else do you need around that?
Yeah. Interestingly, she put a sort of Kickstarter message out that she's not going to do any stretch goals for it.
Okay, when we considered doing Kickstarter, we said the same thing, didn't we?
Yeah.
I don't overcomplicate it, just like go for the comic, because that's what we really want.
I think that's pretty much what she's going for. All the concentration is on the comic book and just doing that the best it can be. So, yeah. Pretty cool.
Good. And there's one more, Just Giving for Little Heroes. If you go to at Little Heroes Kit on Twitter, there's a link on there. And it's just to pay for some storage. But Aaron does a great job in producing little comic kits for kids who are in hospital and he's run out of space at home and he's just looking for some storage. So go over there and just put a couple of quid his way. It's a really good charity. And he's pumping out the books for kids at the moment as well. So have a look at that one. He was at Thought Bubble and he was good company. I spent Friday night with Aaron. Good laugh. Yeah,
nice. There you go. I've got one. The Bristol Comic and Zine Fair 2018, as we speak, is going to be this Saturday, the 6th of October. It is taking place. It's from 12 to 5:30 p.m. At the station Bridewell Island, Bristol, BS12AG. There's going to be lots of great creators there. Publishers like Avery Hill and the like are going to be there as well.
Yeah.
I might see if I can make it to that one. So I know folks like Tom Curry is going to.
Yeah, Tom's going neat. Tom messages, didn't he? I'm thinking about it, but it's a busy comics weekend because it's the Comic Mart the following day as well. Yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm.
Is it really the following day? I thought that was like last week. I thought it was every two months.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just there's another one. It used to be every month, but I saw John Bishop put a message out saying there's one on Saturday and Sunday, so I'm probably going to go that.
Okay. If you want to find out more info about Bristol Comic and Zine Fair, go to bczf.co.uk and you can find out more there.
Cool.
So there you go. Any others?
I think that's it at the moment.
I'm currently doing the art duties on the comic Delta Dawn, which you can read at corgipress.com/comics.
Cool.
And that's updating twice a week.
Nice. More Dan Butcher artwork in the world is always.
Is that the one you just sent us?
That's one of the pages,
Oh, okay, you're in for a treat there.
It's got some Rudy Nudies. They'll be on Friday.
You sent us the unshaded version to look at.
Yes.
Dear. Lord. My word. Saucy. And speaking of saucy, it's time for the recommendations. I don't know. That's a terrible segue. But
go with it.
Yeah, we're going to recommend you some more great indie books and beyond to read. So who wants to go first?
How about guests first? Go on.
Yeah, go on.
Go on, John.
Oh,
go on.
Jesus. Right. right, well, who can I recommend? Well, obviously, I've harped on about him enough, I think, but I will finally say for the record, gunshowcomic.com by Casey Green, which is it's stopped now, but it's available in full archive on his website. I'll tell you who I will recommend is Paul Moore.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
he's a friend of ours. He's great, isn't he?
Yeah,
he was our table mate because we had a half table and he was on the other half, and he was a gentleman all weekend, very very talented man, and he never once complained about my elbow veering into his space while I was drawing. Thanks, Paul.
He is an absolute gentleman.
Need to meet Paul. We've been talking. Yeah. We've been talking to Paul for years, and I've never met him, and I really want to. Yeah,
he's a good guy. He's very funny.
Helping me out with some comic stuff. I was posting it on Twitter, and he was coming up with some ideas. So
that's good.
Thanks, Paul.
Oh, for Vanguard. Yeah, I saw.
Yeah,
that.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, Paul Moore. Another one. I know he got mentioned on the show not long ago, but Charles H. Raymond, who does Death Inc.
Yes.
Right.
He's doing really good work. I think, like, because I spoke to Charles, came to Thought Bubble, and he brought a copy of the new book for me. I think Charles probably sold more copies of his book at Thought Bubble than some people with fucking tables. So shout out to Charles Raymond for cowboying Thought Bubble. But he's doing really good work, and like I spoke to him, and I think he's had like a similar problem that I've had in years gone by, where like. You know, you think you just put out the work and you think that'll be enough and the audience will just kind of come to it. But, you know, you do realize in the end that when you are making indie comics, you're essentially your own PR person.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing your own social media and all that. So he seems to be getting his name out there a lot more now, which is great because Death Incorporated is really good. He's got another one on his website called Dust, which is really good. Todd Oliver, obviously, is another one. I got Boxes 4 and Smedley, and they're very, very good.
He's a gangster, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good one. Andy Barron, of course.
Yeah.
Another one I met at Thought Bubble.
Did you meet Prolix, the Mighty Prolix, while you were there?
I saw Prolix very, very briefly as he was like on the walk down our aisle. Yeah, I did see him briefly. I spoke to him for a bit at Cardiff.
Oh, okay, cool.
We were mainly just taking guesses at how his name is pronounced, and neither myself or my wife were right. So I thought it was Proli. I thought it was French. he was very kind to put us right about that. I did see him in passing, but that's the story of Thought Bubble. Then, you know, I saw him in passing, didn't get a chance to talk. You know?
Yeah. Cool.
Nice. That's lots of people I've got to put in the show notes this week.
I'll send you links. Sorry.
Thank you, John. Who wants to go next?
I don't want to go next.
Go on, Dan.
clear my throat. This is for Killtopia. I backed this one on Kickstarter, but Dave was nice enough to send the copy through to the show.
Yeah.
So Killtopia is 52 pages long. It's published by BHP Comics. It's written by Dave Cook, and the art is by Craig Patton. I believe the lettering's by Rob Jones.
I believe. Okay. I think it might be.
I finally met Dave at Thought Bubble, actually, in a bar.
Oh, nice
he's
one.
Good, he's a good egg. Yeah.
He appeared on this show, episode 146.
Yeah.
Did my research on that one by Googling a couple of words. So that's the extent of the research. No, but we talked on the episode about Cyberpunk, and Dave's written previous comics, Vessels and Bust. And he also did, after he did Killtopia, he'd done a great guide on like how to promote your Kickstarter and get the most out of it, because he did really well on his Kickstarter. He ran a great campaign. Killtopia, very cyberpunk-esque comic. Yeah, the first issue of the series, I'm not sure how many is in the series, but this one focuses on a class of people called the Wreckers, and they're essentially like futuristic gladiators, and they go into like these kind of danger zones which have been outlawed. You can't kind of go into them, you have to kind of break in, and they kind of battle robots and like this. I'm trying to stay away from spoilers, this is such a great story. Yeah. And they kind of smash up these robots and they go and flog on the bits for cash. And you can think of them like modern day, like YouTubers, in as much that they've got their fans, and the more fans they get, the more money they can get by sponsorship from corporations, which see them as kind of nice cash cows. And the story focuses on one of these wreckers who's called Shinji, and he's like a kind of rookie. And all his gear he's got is like crap and secondhand, and he's really struggling to sort of make ends meet. There's a reason why he does what he does, but I'm not going to kind of go into that for I don't want to kind of take the experience away from you. But while he's in one of these danger zones trying to earn a few quids, he comes across a mech which can talk and rationalize, and it's kind of a real big
turning point for the story, and it kind of spins off of that. The comic Killtopia is really, it's influenced by, it's got some influences from great cyberpunk stuff like Running Man, RoboCop. They're all in there. Yeah. The art is fantastic, in as much you look at cityscapes and buildings, and there's like faded signs, faded graffiti,
stunning
posters
stuff
for products.
Yeah, it's lovely colours as well on it. Yeah.
Writing wise, Dave really knows what he's doing. Like, the plot points and the character arcs in this first issue are set up so well. It's just what you want, kind of beginning, middle, and end. It's when you get to the end of it, like, oh shit, I want some more of this. Mm. And one of the kind of the great things about digital over print, you won't hear me say this too much often, is you don't know when you're coming near the end of the digital.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you got the physical comic in your hand on the digital, it's like, oh, fuck, that's the end. And you're like, oh, want some more of that. Whereas the print, you can kind of like prep yourself for that, coming up on you.
Yeah.
There's some real dark moments of humor littered throughout, was kind of very kind of the UK kind of humor that's really poignant and yeah, it's really, really well done.
Yeah.
And Craig Patton, who does the art, he's just absolutely fantastic. And from what I've read, I think this is his first time doing sequential work.
Okay.
So really? Really got to take my hat off to him. Yeah. I could be wrong on that, but
it's got a lovely sort of Jeff Darrow style kind of work to it. That's, you know, every stone is detailed. it's beautiful stuff.
I mean, it's kind of, if with that art style, if it was given to you right now, you've got to flat this. You're like, fuck.
Yeah, that's an image book all over in it to me.
Yeah.
It looks like an image book.
It was longer than I thought it was going to be as well, because obviously this is a comic that's been in the pipeline for a long time, and they've been working very hard on it to get it right. And there was me thinking, oh, it's taken a while, but, you know, surely it's a 20-page comic, 24-page comic, you know. Why is it taking so long? And then it turns up and it's like 50-odd pages. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Didn't we get a teaser on this initially? We got a few pages of it, before he came on. Yeah.
But
a month and a half ago, 2 months ago? Yeah. Something like that.
But a teaser does not prepare you for how good the complete book is.
He does like some fantastic cityscapes. The character designs are absolutely spot on throughout. The kind of the rendering really makes the setting as much as the story does. They work so well together.
Yeah.
And like you said, the kind of lurid skies and the kind of harsh color schemes, it really plays well into it. I think there was a lot of hype for the title, and I'm pleased to report that only lives up to the hype.
It does really well.
I think they've done something really well here. Like, they've done a dystopian future that seems very believable. They've taken elements of 80s cyberpunk and then worked in more modern influences and stuff that's going on around us in society, and done it really well. It's really nice stuff. And you can, if you go to cardsharkcomics.com, you can find out more from Dave there. I think you can buy it direct from BHP Comics as well. I think BHP Comics picked this up before the Kickstarter had even run its course.
Yeah.
So it's sort of testament to how good this is. It's very accomplished piece of work.
Quite the sort of creative powerhouse, aren't they, BHP? I know I spoke to them a few times about stuff, but they're I compare them to being kind of the north of the border, Avery Hill, actually. The amount of work they're putting out, really good stuff.
So kind of thing, they pick the titles just right, and they can really make a name for themselves. They've done great.
Yeah.
Great work.
I think it was Rock of the Reds, BHP.
Yeah,
I'm trying to
remember. It was.
That's a class act as well.
Okay, I'll go next.
Mine was a short, sharp book that I pledged on Kickstarter to get it. I know it was launched at Thought Bubble by my good pal Jenny Yilblad.
Former guest. She was opposite me, I told you, didn't I?
And she was bringing the crazy, as she always does. But we love her for it. But yeah, I got my hands on her signature. Tony. Her 12-page sort of one-shot signature, which is a one-shot sort of black and white horror comic.
Oh, okay. I've not seen this.
And it was great to see sort of Jenny sort of do this kind of work, because she's full time. She's doing lots of different styles of project, whether it be like, you know, sci-fi, slice of life. You know, she definitely peddles the filth, as she says as well. She does.
Still one of my favourite episodes. Still, because she came on and we thought, tone it down. It's sex special. She just outdid us, didn't she? Yep. She just went for it. It still makes me laugh if I listen to it now. That one. Yeah.
Yep. She's definitely got to come back on the show in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Local to Leeds now, so and she managed to put this book out. She must have done it in between all the other jobs, and I know it's been in the pipeline for a long time. It's a nice, short, really creepy, would I say it's a ghost story? Yes, I think I would, but it will properly creep you out. It's a ghost story in the way that sort of Junji Ito does his sort of ghost stories. Like lots of people, one of my favourite sort of horror stories of all time was in the is it Gyo? That was one of it. Do you remember?
Oh, I've not read that yet.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's a twisted sort of story by itself, but there was a short called The Enigma of Amigara Fault, which is all about these strange shapes in this mountain. But that is the creepiest horror story I think I've read in comic book format.
Okay.
And this little short completely has that kind of it properly sort of puts you on edge and creeps you out. And it's basically a story of like I think there's a moment of autobiographical nature to it as well, because it's about an artist who's obviously up late working on sequential work, not happy with a certain page. She's run out of coffee, but the rest of the house is dark apart from the space where the desk is. So she has to go and make coffee, and there may be something else in the house with her. You know, a simple set. No, there's no budgie, so it's clearly not autobiographical. but, you know, there's definitely a real twisted, haunting vibe to it. Like all great horror stories, there's a sort of sting in the tail, like semi-tragic. I've read it a few times, like cover to cover. And what I quite like about this as well, there's no credit page or anything. It's literally what you have is like a 12-page comic, and you know it's like the front cover works as almost page one of the story, and the back cover is the final page of the story.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing in between. What you get here is a complete story in your hands from cover to cover. It's some of my favourite work that Jen's done. I think the front cover and back cover I could stare at for a long time, and all they are is just like a sort of an artist working at a desk, but there's so much detail in like the pots of pens, and you know you find yourself looking at the desk to see what the artist has got on their
right
corkboard for reference and stuff. I noticed a little detail to the front cover that I hadn't noticed before that ties into the story, which makes it even creepier. So Signature, you can go to jennyyilblad.co.uk. She put out lots of she's got these sort of thin business cards, you know those ones, they're more like
yeah,
sort of
I know
strips.
What you mean. Yeah.
And what she did with all her business cards as well, because I think she's someone fueled by coffee, I think because coffee is quite important to the story, each one of the business cards that she gave out to the Kickstarter has like a drop of coffee on it, like literal real coffee.
Oh, that's cool.
Really?
Yeah, which is quite nice. It's almost like a signature without being a signature. So everyone's got an individual business card. So that was quite cool. So yeah, definitely check out her work and her website.
How do you know it's coffee?
Because I smelt it. Yeah, hang on. Yeah, it's coffee.
Okay.
We never had a live smelling on the show before.
Yeah,
yes.
Quite erotic.
Yeah. Oh. So yeah,
we've got that under the belt.
Yeah, yeah. We're just checking off the bucket list. We're just checking off the bucket list as we go. So speaking of lists, what's your one to add to the wish list, Tony?
Mine is something by Noah Van Sciver. Has anyone ever read anything by him?
No.
Noah is the brother of Ethan, but their styles could not be more different, I've got to tell you.
Right.
So this is called 1999, and there's a reason for that. It's 36 pages, black and white, and it's 69p currently on Comixology. Published by Retrofit Comics. So if anyone knows their stuff, they know that Retrofit are the guys who put out Avery Hill books in the States. And they've sort of got this sort of this arrangement where they put out Retrofit Comics here and they put out Avery Hill over there.
Yeah.
I'll read you the back of the comic. In 1999, I had no direction in life. I was a college dropout, living with my mum and working at a sub shop. No plans, no real interest, except for Nora. I really wanted to sleep with Nora. That's the back of the comic. It opens with the central character is called Mark, and he's in an ambulance, and he's got a stab wound to the gut, and he's sort of staring up at the camera. And you think, what's happened there? And then you time jump back to Mark sitting on his couch, and he is really worried about the Y2K virus, which is going to obviously cause the end of civilization. Do you remember when we all thought that for about 10 minutes? And it turns out he's a college dropout, and his mum has brought him up as a sort of single mum. He lives at home, and he works at the local sort of, it's like a Subway, like a sandwich shop, you know, they have in the States. He heads into work and arrives there, and just as a customer is complaining that there are pubes in his sandwich, and apparently this customer is always coming in and complaining that someone has dumped a load of pubes into his sandwich, and he then throws his sandwich at the owner. That becomes a subject later on. So Mark sort of says to him, well, why do you keep coming in here and eating sandwiches? You know, Mark's pretty unlikable, as is the sort of nature of a lot of these sort of slightly autobiographical sort of hipster type comics in the States. He's quite the sort of just doesn't care about stuff. He's a lot lazy. He's a lot rude, and he's just a tiny bit anti-Hispanic racist as well. He meets a girl on the night shift who turns out to that she's married, but she tells him that she's in an open relationship. And it turns out that it's the girl who keeps putting pubes in these sandwiches for a laugh. She just sort of randomly puts her pubic hair in the sandwiches, as you do. Of course, it ends up with him fucking her on the kitchen side, in the kitchen, you know, where they make the sandwiches sort of thing. This girl is quite freaky sexually. She's quite experimental. She's quite out there. She says she fantasizes about a lot of freaky sex, and when she asks, he goes, well, what? And she goes, I don't think you can cope with me telling you. She suggests that she asks if he's ever tasted his own ejaculate at one point, and he's gone, oh no, not really. And then obviously it shifts to sort of Christmas Eve, and he's feeling a bit down on himself, and he's at home masturbating, and then it just, you see him with some of his ejaculate in his hand, and then it sort of switches, and you think, oh no, what did he do?
God. Yeah.
It's like one of those sort of slacker tales we used to see more of back then, you know, so this sort of slacker character. It is pretty gross. But it does feel like quite, not that I've ever done that, but it does feel like quite sort of genuine about people. They're all a little bit grubby and a little bit dirty, and they don't really care, and they work in sort of low paid jobs. And it's just, and then something happens, and I won't spoil it. And you realise why he's been stabbed in the gut, if he has been, and why he's in an ambulance. So it's not a short read. I mean, it's 36 pages, so it's longer than the average comic, but it's kind of a bit of a twist in it, quite fun, quite insulting, quite gross at moments. But yeah, a few people have recommended this creator to me. I've got a feeling that Nick actually recommended him to me. And it would, if I put it on a shelf in a shop, I'd put it next to sort of Crumb and Seth and Kochalka and, you know, that Peter Bagg and all that sort of crowd of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it definitely has got something about it. I'll probably look him out a bit more. Nervan Skyver. He did Fante Bukowski, which I think got nominated for an Eisner or something like that from about 2015. If you go to nvanskyver, vanscivere.wordpress.com, there's loads of free comics to read on there, actually. It's one of those sort of sites which has got like page after page of his sort of free one-page comics to read. Really good sort of rough-edged comics for the next kind of stuff, but yeah, quite readable still. You know, it's not like sort of a lot of that stuff can be quite unreadable, can't it? But this is it's quite interesting and funny, and he doesn't always go there. You know, when you see him with his ejaculate in his hand, you think no, and then it sort of shifts, and you just sort of have to sort of read into what's happened. You know, but yeah, I'd recommend it. I think you'd like it, John. I think he would be up your street. Yeah, definitely. And as I say, it's only 69p on Comixology. There's a big sort of indie sale. I don't know if you've been on there recently. There's a sort of, there's about 1,000 titles, and I found it in there, just sort of cruising
through.
It's
worth having a look through those sort of sales.
I was going to say, comics about pubes, I don't think that's going to work.
It's got jizz as well, though.
Yeah, pubes and jizz.
Yeah, Vince, you know those dates you offered me for the podcast? I've changed my mind. Can I have October the 14th instead?
Anyway, we've given you a lot of books to check out this week, a lot of titles. So check out the show notes, where you'll find links to all these titles. Hope that people do check out the show notes.
Yeah,
I don't always manage
you
to get the
take a lot of effort on them, don't you?
Yeah, I don't always get the links like working on the day, but like, you know, if you check out the page, then you'll be able to find loads of brilliant comics, and that's what this show's all about. So yeah, and we hope you all enjoyed it, even though it ended on jizz and
it always
ends like that, doesn't it, our shows. So we hope you enjoyed it. If let us know if we got anything wrong or right, or if you just want to talk to someone, we're always here for you at awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We don't have any competitions or anything at the moment, do we, Tony?
No, I don't think we do.
No. But if you just want to talk to Tony, just send an email. No! Let's call back to the last episode. Follow us on Twitter at TheAwesomePod, where we'll post up who the next guests are. We've got a bunch of guests lined up. Very exciting.
Yep.
As was this week's guest. Very exciting indeed. And there's plenty more to come, so check out the Twitter for that. And also our Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do the Book of Faces, then, and you do like talking in groups and stuff, then go to Awesome Comics Talk. Search for that on Facebook, because there's loads of conversation going on there. Every day, every week, in every way, you know. Our listeners put loads of different sort of threads on there, don't they? Each week.
It's been a good week for on there actually.
Yeah. I think it's good that there's quite a lot of comic creators in that group as well, because I joined and there's a fair few people on both sides of it. So the group's good.
Yeah. If people ask a question about comics, whether it be making comics or like, you know, presenting them or whatever, you won't just get like one reply. There's a conversation that happens. Everyone's got their own experiences and stuff. It's very good. So Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. if you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, just generally put the word out, we love you for it. Much like if you listened on Spotify, now we're properly legit, now we're on there. And likewise, the networks such as Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Sausage Pistol.
I know every week you do that based on something you're looking at, so I'm terrified of what you were looking at.
I just looked up sperm on the Urban Dictionary and it came up with sausage pistol, and I thought
I do. We have to bring back the dictionary corner.
Yeah,
I want that as well, didn't we?
Yeah, it's going to happen somewhere soon. Who knows? Christmas is coming. There might be an extra long episode of it.
We're going to start thinking about our end of the year best of soon, aren't we?
Yeah,
where's it gone?
I know. It's already October. Can you believe it? Yeah. But there's plenty more awesome comics to come. So there you go. Thank you very much for listening. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz, neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. And there's a thing just gone up today or yesterday all about Nottingham Comic Convention, which we shall be at, and releasing issue 3 of our book. So come along and get
it. Awesome Comics, which
we should be getting that delivered on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's going to be delivered next week. Expect a few sort of social media posts of like, oh, look at what I've got in the post, like I normally do. But yeah, thoroughly looking forward to it. And where can people get the other issues of the comic?
On our Big Cartel store. It's the Awesome Comic Pod / Big Cartel, or vice versa. And we got issues 1 and 2, both print and digital.
Do you know what that was so smooth, I can't even tell whether you got anything wrong.
I think it did.
You always get stuff right, Dan. And where can people find you online, etc.?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice.
What do you fucking mean by that?
It was the biggest one I've ever had. You can find me online at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmouseforMars.com. And our wonderful guest, John Tucker. You've been an absolute star, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed being here. It's been good.
Oh, good. Good. There were moments where you were obviously listening, because I honestly thought, is he gone?
Yeah, that's good though.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, so once again, where can people find you online, etc., and get your work?
People can find me online. I'm on Twitter at John Tucker Art. My main website is johntucker.co.uk, and as you mentioned before, you can use the code AWESOME to get the Podcaster's Delight bundle for a tenner. And that's all my books. That's everything I've ever put out.
£10, that's
there
good.
You go, that is an absolute bargain. So that is how we're going to sign off with a massive success like that. So thank you very much for listening, folks. Go forth and buy all of John's stuff.
From yes, Dan, please do.
From Dan, Tony, John and myself. Have a brilliant week. And as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Thank you, Dan. At least I can trust you. Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye. If you do put that in, can we like dub in a disapproving noise from me just so I know?
Yeah.
Ooh, don't know about that. Oh.
Yeah, go on. Go on. Give us your best one. Come on.
Right, here we go. Ooh, don't know about that.
Nah, that's too sexy. Maybe that got me a bit aroused.
That's all you get. That's all you're getting.
Yeah. Be careful about giving Vince clean audio of your voice.
Yeah, nothing exploitable.